Take the story of Carpenter Mike and drop his tools and his keys and left and headed out as far as he could past the city and gated neighborhoods and slept beneath the stars. Wrote down what he dreamt and he built a machine for no one to see and to fly. First light of new morning.
There's a million sad stories on the side of the road. Strange how we all just got used to the blood. Millions of stories that'll never be told. Silent and frozen in the mud. Silent and frozen in the mud. I know a cold.
This is WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm John Anderson.
And I'm Sarah Turner.
Even though most seniors can't afford to hire a lobbyist, they're still being represented in Congress. Or are they? According to a new report by Public Citizen, the pharmaceutical industry all but wrote George W. Bush's recent Medicare legislation. Drug manufacturers and HMOs spent $141 million hiring 952 individual lobbyists in 2003. Craig Aaron is the author of the report.
There are 30 former congressmen currently on the payroll of the drug companies that worked on this bill in 2003. Also, a number of top officials in the Bush administration, including the head of Medicare itself, left almost immediately after this bill was passed to go work on behalf of drug companies.
Public Citizen is calling for a cooling-off period of 5 years after a person leaves Congress before they can gain employment as a lobbyist.
State workers in California have preserved their own pensions, but future workers will pay in a big way. Faced with a new fiscal year starting tomorrow and a $1 billion budget shortfall, Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger and the California State Employees Association, which represents some 140 people, struck a curious deal late Sunday. Current state employees' pensions will not be touched, but all new workers will be required to contribute into a state-administered savings account with no corresponding match for their first 2 years. In essence, new state workers will give California a risk-free 2-year loan. It's believed 3/4 of new state workers will drop out of the state pension system completely as a result of this new setup, thereby reducing the future retirement burden on the state.
In addition to delaying the return of 20,000 U.S. troops earlier this year, the U.S. Army announced on Monday it's planning to mobilize thousands more reservists for involuntary missions to Afghanistan and Iraq. However, they're drawing the 5,600 troops from the individual ready reserve, mainly soldiers who have already completed their active duty obligations and returned to civilian life. The Pentagon seems to be way off its original estimate to have reduced American forces in Iraq by 110,000.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report.
A new study released by the League of Conservation Voters revealed just 25 coal-fired utilities in 12 states were responsible for the bulk of 58,000 pounds of mercury dumped into the air in 2001. A proposed Bush plan allows companies to bypass new clean air standards on smokestacks. Critics point to the $6 million in contributions utility corporations gave Bush in the 2000 election.
You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Can we hope to achieve real progress while corporations wield control over our government and many civic institutions? At ReclaimDemocracy.org, we believe revoking illegitimate corporate power is a prerequisite for making genuine progress on the issues that affect us all. If you'd like to help restore citizen authority over corporations, get involved. Visit us at ReclaimDemocracy.org or call 406-582-1224.
One of the greatest music joints in my town of Austin, Texas, was Liberty Lunch, which regularly featured up-and-coming local musicians as well as such national talents as Taj Mahal. This bar, cafe, and music yard was inexpensive, adventuresome, laid-back, unique, and, well, it was Austin. I say was because it's gone. A few years ago, our mayor gave taxpayer subsidies to lure something called CSC Corporation to town, giving it the spot of city-owned land that Liberty Lunch had rented for years. So now, we have a cold six-story building housing a high-tech military contractor that has no roots in Austin, is not in character with our city, and offers nothing to our way of life. What we do not have are the good eats, good sounds, and good spirit that emanated every night from that spot, drawing thousands of enthusiastic customers and helping define Austin for people everywhere. Austin is hardly alone in suffering a steady erosion of our homegrown businesses to impersonal corporate giants, big box stores, and cookie-cutter chains. It's probably happening where you live, too. No one voted for this, but these giants get public subsidies, wield massive advertising budgets, and have deep pocket financing and the political clout to bully their way in, remaking our communities in their own bland, self-serving image. But you and I don't have to support them. Let's assert our own grassroots buying power to proclaim a new economic independence. A group called AMIBA, American Independent Business Alliance, has organized the Indy Challenge, urging we the people to rediscover the local businesses that make our town special, from coffee shops to restaurants, bookstores to hardware stores, pharmacies to farmers markets. This is Jim Hightower saying, we have the power. Ask your friends, families, clubs, churches, unions, and local governments to join you in using their dollars for community self-determination. For help, call AMIBA, 406-582-1255.
How to load the family vehicle for a 4th of July vacation. Step 1. Measure the allotted cubic feet of storage space. Step 2. Measure the cubic feet of family possessions to be loaded into said storage space. Step 3. At all costs, avoid saying the 7 unmentionable words. Your 3-year-old will just end up repeating them for the entire drive. This holiday road tip is brought to you by Geico. Stay alert, drive safe, save money.
You think I'd maybe had some Bush's phases? Maybe, please. I'm a Carrier air conditioner. Isolation lets me focus on keeping you comfy.
For unmatched expertise, Carrier stands alone.
I'm an expert. You're on the job. Don't even think about it, Doug.
Our air conditioners with Puron refrigerant are energy efficient and environmentally sound with a 10-year limited warranty. See dealer for details.
Nothing can stop my dedication. Heat waves, rain, your kid's soccer ball. Ouch. I'm fine, really.
No wonder Carrier's trusted in more homes than any other brand. Carrier, turn to the experts.
He's the man who uncovers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
And greetings, friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Tom Hartman here with you, broadcasting live on terrestrial radio stations from California to North Carolina, beaming around the planet on cable radio network and radiopower.org. Back up now. Back on iTunes and all that. Streaming down from the depths of outer space on the Sirius satellite radio system. It is Wednesday, June 30th. It's the end of the government fiscal year for many agencies. And in that context, an interesting little bit of news I received today, an email, thought you would find fascinating. Congress today announced that the Office of the President of the United States will be outsourced to overseas as of today, June 30th, the end of this fiscal year. The move is being made to save $400,000 a year in salary and a record $521 billion in deficit expenditures and related overhead. Congressman Adam Smith of Washington said the cost savings will be quite significant. He's the guy who, with the aid of the Congressional Research Arm of the General Accounting Office, has studied outsourcing of American jobs extensively. He says, we simply can no longer afford this level of outlay and remain competitive in the world stage. Exporting American jobs has become a popular trend lately, ironically, at the urging of President Bush. Mr. Bush was informed by email this morning of the termination of his position. He will receive health coverage, expenses, and salary until his final day of employment, the end of the day today. After that, with a two-week waiting period, he will then be eligible for $240 a week from unemployment insurance for 13 weeks. Unfortunately, he will not be able to receive state Medicaid health insurance coverage as his unemployment benefits are over the required limit. I'm in shock, Mr. Bush stated. I thought for sure I'd have some job security around this place. I have no idea what I'll do now. Preparations have been underway for some time for the job move, it turns out. Sanji Gurvinder Singh of Indus Teleservice in Mumbai, India, will be assuming the office of President of the United States as of July 1st. Mr. Singh was born in the United States while his parents were here on student visas, thus making him eligible for the position. He will receive a salary of $320 a month, but with no health coverage or other benefits. Due to the time difference between the U.S. and India, Mr. Singh will be working primarily at night when offices of the U.S. government will be open. He said in an exclusive interview, I'm excited to serve in this position. Working nights will let me keep my day job at the American Express call center. I always knew I could be president someday. Congress stressed patience when calling Mr. Singh, as he may not be fully aware of all the issues involved with his new position. A congressional spokesperson noted, however, that Mr. Singh has been given a script to follow, which will allow him to respond to most topics of concern. The spokesperson further noted that, quote, additional savings will be realized as these scripting tools have already been used previously by Mr. Bush here in the U.S. Such scripts will now enable Mr. Singh to provide an answer without having to fully understand the issue itself. Congress, in a footnote to this, Congress continues to explore other outsourcing possibilities, such as that of the vice president and most of the cabinet positions. Interesting news for the day. Well, oh, by the way, at the bottom of the hour, this hour, we're going to have on the guy who is, who, you know, some people say brought down Bill Clinton with his, I believe it was the Jennifer Flowers lawsuit. It was one of those women. And Larry Klayman, who started Judicial Watch and now is suing Dick Cheney, and now is also claiming that Michael Moore copied his research for Fahrenheit 9/11, and is also running for the Senate in the state of Florida. Conservative founder of Judicial Watch, Larry Klayman. That should be, what's this guy? Maybe he's really not a bipartisan, or maybe he's nuts, or maybe he's brilliant. I mean, who knows? We're going to find out at the bottom of the hour. John Kerry, some time ago, had introduced, 2 years ago actually, had introduced, along with John McCain, a proposal to increase the mileage standards on American fleet vehicles. Now, oddly, you know, one of the things that baffles me about this is that the United Auto Workers are opposed to increasing what are called CAFE standards. That is the fleet mile. In other words, all the cars that General Motors makes have to get a certain number of miles per gallon. And as I recall right now, yeah, the current standard is 27.5 miles per gallon. And the Kerry McCain proposal was that the U.S. adopt a 40 mile per gallon fleet standard. And their proposal was really rather soft. I mean, they suggested that they were proposing a 36 mile per gallon proposal goal, and by 2015, and setting it not as a requirement but a goal. Okay. So I mean, this is like gentle. I don't have a better word for it. I'm sorry. So the Union of Concerned Scientists, which is a group that, they've been around forever. I mean, I'm forgetting the last name of the guy who founded this thing. He was a nuclear physicist. And back in the 70s, I wrote a series of articles in which I interviewed him. I'm not even sure if he's still around. But anyhow, a great group, a solid group of, you know, serious scientists. They just did the math on this stuff. And they found that had the U.S. 2 years ago adopted a 40 mile per gallon fleet standard for 2002. In other words, you know, given the industry 2 years to make the transition, it would have created more than 40,000 new jobs in the auto industry by the year 2010. Added to the jobs benefit, they also found, Union of Concerned Scientists found, that the 40-mile-per-gallon standard would conserve 2 million barrels of oil daily. That's 62% of everything we import from the Persian Gulf. Keep in mind, Saudi Arabia is right now keeping Prince Bandar's promise to George W. Bush, trying to drive down oil prices by increasing Saudi oil production by just a little less than a million barrels a day. And that's like, you know, flipping the whole economy. I mean, you know, it's interesting to put this in context. As ABC World News Tonight said on July 25th, 2000, this during the presidential campaign, when Cheney was named as Bush's choice for vice president, an ABC News World News Tonight piece noted, quote, his Cheney's years in the private sector will also be scrutinized. He became rich in his years as chairman of the oil services giant Halliburton. Records show that he sold his holdings for $5 million last June, just as oil prices were skyrocketing and consumers were paying a premium at the pump. Well, what was that skyrocketing? Well, in July of 1999, Americans were shocked as the price of gas hit 114 cents. $1.14.9. That .9 is always tricky, right? $1.15 a gallon. When at the beginning of 1999, people had been paying 95 cents a gallon. And Cheney, you know, says, well, he's optimistic, you know, and things are going to be just fine. Well, so what's the significance of this? I think that the context here is really important because so many people don't put together two and two, and it is, you know, the cons say those conservatives who are sellouts to the world's largest corporations, the oil industry, the nuclear industry, the energy industry, the auto industry even. Although, you know, as this UCS study or a USC study showed, the auto industry would actually create jobs. I mean, of course it would, if we increase mileage standards. They're going to have to innovate. They're going to have to modify. You know, yeah, they may not, because their profits might drop a little bit over the short term, or the prices of cars might go up a little bit. But, you know, as life goes on, right? I mean, this has happened before. But the real 2+2, the real thing that the cons don't want you to kind of connect the dots, is that our reliance on imported oil, more than half of which is used by automobiles in the United States, is the main reason why we're in Iraq right now, why our young men are dying. I mean, this is just so apparent. Oh, we took out a ruthless dictator. Well, you know, how about Mugabe in Zimbabwe? Well, Zimbabwe doesn't have any oil. Well, you know, how about in Burma? You know, this little junta there that's... Burma doesn't have any Myanmar. You know, they don't have any oil. It's a strategic location. Well, why is it a strategic location? Because there's oil. Yes. Okay, so here we find the front page of today's Wall Street Journal. The widening turmoil in the Middle East has dealt the U.S. Coast Guard an urgent new task, protecting overseas oil. Now, the Coast Guard was created by Alexander Hamilton in 1790. Let's see. That would have been the last 2 years of George Washington's presidency, if I'm doing my recollecting right. And it was created for two purposes. One was to patrol our coasts, but that was really the smaller purpose, because we had a navy to do that. And back then, we thought of our navy as having as its main job protecting our shores. And secondly, its most important job was to collect tariffs. In order to protect, quoting from both Thomas Jefferson, Tench Cox, and Alexander Hamilton, to protect domestic industries, quote unquote, in order to help American businesses grow, the government of the United States in the 1780s had placed tariffs, taxes, on imported goods, on virtually everything that could be imported. And the lowest taxes, of course, were on things that there was no way we would ever make here in the United States. you know, sandalwood oil, stuff like that. The highest taxes, French wine actually had a fairly low tariff. The highest taxes were on things that we could make here in the United States, and therefore we wanted to encourage domestic production. Clothing, for example. Whiskey, of all things. Rum, you know, had a high tariff on it. Wooden goods, furniture, silverware. These all had high taxes. And the Coast Guard was created to stop, to intercept boats as they were coming into ports, or to meet them at port as they came into port and collect these taxes. And the tariffs in 1790 were the principal way that the United States government paid for itself, in addition to encouraging the growth of entrepreneurialism and business in the United States. And it worked. It worked right up until the 1980s, when Ronald Reagan started dismantling the process, and 1996, of course, when Bill Clinton signed NAFTA and GATT and just blew the whole thing out of the water. It worked. But now we've got the Coast Guard patrolling the Persian Gulf. The Coast Guard. Who's protecting our coast? One question. Number two, what does this tell us about what's going on here? And what can we do about it? 20 minutes past the hour, Tom Hartman with you.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com. Or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
Are George Bush's policies getting you down? Have you had enough of Bush's messianic militarism? Does John Ashcroft's assault on the Bill of Rights scare you? Do you believe that Dick Cheney had his conscience surgically removed 3 decades ago? Are you angry at the Iraq fiasco that was the brainchild of Deputy Secretary of Defense Paul out of his Wolfowitz? Well, then subscribe to the Progressive Magazine. You'll get the insights of Barbara Ehrenreich, the inspiration of Howard Zinn, and the mirth of Molly Ivins, Will Durst, and Kate Clinton. They'll help you survive this dark age. And check this out. You can subscribe today for only $12 for 12 monthly issues. Simply get on the web and go to www.progressive.org or call 1-800-827-0555 and mention offer radio. That's 1-800-827-0555 and mention the radio offer from the Tom Hartman Program. That's the Progressive. It's your antidote to reactionary policies.
At last, there's a positive focus on a condition that affects millions. Read The Edison Gene, ADHD and the Gift of the Hunter Child by Tom Hartman, best-selling author of Attention Deficit Disorder, A Different Perception. John Rady, author of User's Guide to the Brain, says this about The Edison Gene.
Once again, with tireless scholarship and a bit of poetry, Tom Hartman helps take us to the edge of knowing ourselves, our brains, and our world.
The Edison Gene, available in bookstores everywhere.
Do the Republicans or the Democrats have a clear vision for America that actually includes democracy, fairness, and justice? Do the Greens or the Progressives? How can we create a shared vision of the kind of future we want for our children? This is Tom Hartman, and I'll be exploring these and many other issues with guests from a wide variety of viewpoints, as well as taking your calls.
The Tom Hartman Show, 12 p.m. till 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time.
Do you want to find out what the invasion of Iraq was really about? Read the new illustrated book, We the People, A Call to Take Back America by Tom Hartman. Once you've read We the People, you'll understand why conservatives are trying to bankrupt government and how perpetual war is used as a political strategy in the United States. You'll learn how our votes are in danger and what we must do about it. You'll discover why the Alien and Sedition Acts of 1798 matter today. Populist watchdog and national radio commentator Jim Hightower had this to say about We the People.
Not only does this book tell you what's really going on, but it even draws you a picture of it. Read, learn, and act.
We the People, A Call to Take Back America by Tom Hartman. A compelling story of how a government by and for the people has been replaced by corporate domination. Fully illustrated by Neil Cohn, We the People issues a call to action in a most entertaining way. Available in bookstores everywhere.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
The proverbial right-wing media machine. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number if you'd like to participate. The Wall Street Journal notes, this is shaping up to be a globe-spanning, open-ending U.S. campaign to protect oil shipping around the world. Down in Colombia, we've got special forces helping protect an oil pipeline. In Yemen and in the Caucasus, we've got the Coast Guard protecting oil pipelines, oil facilities. Marines on speedboats in the Straits of Malacca, which is between that's what we cut off, by the way, that provoked the Japanese to attack us at Pearl Harbor, the Straits of Malacca. Louise and I have sailed through there. It's right between Malaysia and Indonesia. On the one side, and Borneo on the other. Anyhow, we're there. I mean, we're all over the place. Now we're sending two more cutters, highly maneuverable. What's going on? The Wall Street Journal says we are spending an average of $4 to $5 per barrel to protect oil leaving the Persian Gulf. You and I, with our tax dollars, are spending $4 to $5 a barrel to protect Persian Gulf oil. It's a hidden cost. The oil companies are making the profits. You and I are paying for it out of our taxes. Is this the kind of America we want? 26 minutes past the hour, 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. John in Santa Fe is on the line. Hey, John, what's up?
I just got a question for you. They've handed over Saddam Hussein.
Yeah.
Supposedly. It's a little unclear if it's really a handover or something else. But is there any suggestion as to how this trial is going to be handled? I mean, is this guy... do you have any idea? I've been able to find nothing out. Nothing.
Well, I can give you one, I think, probably reasonable guarantee. It will be the trial of Saddam Hussein will be handled in a way that will generate the greatest amount of publicity for his heinous crimes while dictator of Iraq before the U.S. election on November 2nd. This is a set piece in Karl Rove's... the tricks up his sleeve. This is one of them, and they are going to milk this thing. They're going to get all. You know, they're going to get victims out there. Oh, he cut off my hand. Oh, he. You know, his son raped my wife. Blah blah. And because the new song and dance is. I mean, as George Bush, when he was being interviewed by Irish television a couple days ago. You know, this interview where the woman interrupted him a few times, and they were so upset that Laura Bush wouldn't be interviewed by them. She said, well, you know, the majority of the Irish people are not with you. They're not happy. In fact, it's here's her opening statement. I thought this was. Here we go.
Unfortunately, the majority of our public do not welcome your visit because they're angry over Iraq. They're angry over Abu Ghraib. Are you bothered by what Irish people think?
Yeah, and so, you know, this kind of thing. And Bush immediately starts talking about 9/11. And she tries to interrupt him and says, you know, Iraq isn't about 9/11. And he's, let me talk. And So anyway, well, that's what they're going to do.
You know what? One last thing along those lines. I appreciate that comment. What, do you have a feeling that that the military and the government of the United States and maybe Pakistan as well know exactly where Osama bin Laden is, and they're going to produce him somewhere around the middle of October?
Yeah, I'd bet on it, and it would be interesting to know what odds makers in Las Vegas are. You know, I'm sure somebody's got a pool on going on this thing. You know, I'm not a bettor, so I don't know the language of it, but there's got to be, Rove has got to have about a half a dozen. You know, as I said, they changed the date of the NATO summit in Turkey so that it would coincide with the handoff of the so-called sovereignty to Iraq. And, in fact, NATO changed it twice. Once it was in May, once it was in July, then it went to June 30th. So the Bush could be there so he could make a surprise visit. The security situation was so bad that he didn't. But, Rove has got a whole bunch of these things all set and ready, orchestrated, ready to go. And I think you've just identified two of them. Thanks a lot for the call, John. Good to hear from you. It's the Tom Hartman radio program, 29 minutes past the hour, where our talking points come from Jefferson and Madison. For more than 27 years, the progressive magazine In These Times has provided groundbreaking coverage of movements for social, environmental, and economic justice. Author and broadcast personality Studs Terkel calls In These Times his bi-weekly tonic. In These Times features award-winning reporting and analysis of national and international news. Find In These Times on your newsstand or visit us online at www.inthesetimes.com or call 1-800-827-0270. 1-800-827-0270.
Pop and not so pop culture, democracy and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
This is WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm John Anderson.
And I'm Sarah Turner.
Even though most seniors can't afford to hire a lobbyist, they're still being represented in Congress. Or are they? According to a new report by Public Citizen, the pharmaceutical industry all but wrote George W. Bush's recent Medicare legislation. Drug manufacturers and HMOs spent $141 million hiring 952 individual lobbyists in 2003. Craig Aaron is the author of the report.
There are 30 former congressmen currently on the payroll of the drug companies that worked on this bill in 2003. Also, a number of top officials in the Bush administration, including the head of Medicare itself, left almost immediately after this bill was passed to go work on behalf of drug companies.
Public Citizen is calling for a cooling off period of 5 years after a person leaves Congress before they can gain employment as a lobbyist.
State workers in California have preserved their own pensions, but future workers will pay in a big way. Faced with a new fiscal year starting tomorrow and a $1 billion budget shortfall, Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger and the California State Employees Association, which represents some 140,000 people, struck a curious deal late Sunday. Current state employees' pensions will not be touched, but all new workers will be required to contribute into a state-administered savings account with no corresponding match for their first 2 years. In essence, new state workers will give California a risk-free 2-year loan. It's believed 3/4 of new state workers will drop out of the state pension system completely as a result of this new setup, thereby reducing the future retirement burden on the state.
In addition to delaying the return of 20,000 U.S. troops earlier this year, the U.S. Army announced on Monday it's planning to mobilize thousands more reservists for involuntary missions to Afghanistan and Iraq. However, they're drawing the 5,600 troops from the individual ready reserve, mainly soldiers who have already completed their active duty obligations and returned to civilian life. The Pentagon seems to be way off its original estimate to have reduced American forces in Iraq by 110,000.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report.
A new study released by the League of Conservation Voters revealed just 25 coal-fired utilities in 12 states were responsible for the bulk of 58,000 pounds of mercury dumped into the air in 2001. A proposed Bush plan allows companies to bypass new clean air standards on smokestacks. Critics point to the $6 million in contributions utility corporations gave Bush in the 2000 election.
You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
democracy to the United States of America. Here's Tom Hartman.
It's just
and welcome back, my friends. 27 minutes before the hour. Tom Hartman here with you, broadcasting live coast to coast, border to border, and streaming down from outer space on the Sirius satellite system as well. And for the last year and a half or so, I've been periodically sharing with you these extraordinary documents that were pried out of the Cheney Energy meetings by JudicialWatch.org, or Judicial Watch, their website, JudicialWatch.org, and Larry Klayman. He's also the guy who some say brought down Bill Clinton, or at least started the process. And now in the news, just in the last couple of days, I've seen twice now mentions of Larry. Once was around his comments about Bill Clinton's autobiography, and I believe it was Jennifer Flowers. And the other was with regard to Michael Moore's movie, 9/11, and Klayman suggesting that his book, Fatal Neglect, covered many of the same issues. In other words, that he had done some of the research for Michael Moore. So I thought it would be great to get this guy on here. I've been sending Larry Klayman. Welcome to the Tom Hartman program.
Thank you, Tom. Thank you for having me, as we say.
Yeah, you're welcome.
I'm now running for U.S. Senate. I stepped down at Judicial Watch last September to try to take the fight for ethics inside of the U.S. government itself, inside the belly of the beast.
Yeah, and you're running for the U.S. Senate from Florida. Are you running against Bob?
Florida, yeah. My website is claymansenate.com with a K.
Okay, K-L-A-Y-M-A-N, right. Senate.com.
Right,
okay. Larry, first of all, a quick question here. This has been, you know, nagging at me. You've seen the documents that you guys got out of the Cheney Energy Commission meeting. You just lost before the Supreme Court, or it got moved back basically to after the election cycle.
Yeah, we didn't lose. I mean, certainly we wanted it out before the election. We wanted it out 3 years ago, but we didn't lose.
Yeah.
It's been put back. You're right, Tom.
Yeah, so Cheney gets to, you know, fight this battle again after the first of the year, assuming that Bush and Cheney get reelected, which may be a big assumption.
And let me tell you, that's one of the reasons I decided to run for the Senate, because I saw how the courts allow these things to happen. And Bill Clinton tried to run out the clock, too. And that's part and parcel to our court system. It needs huge revamping.
Yeah, well, yeah, we have a lot of failings and weaknesses here in the United States. But the question, you know, when I was looking through the documents that you had there, where they had divided up the oil fields of Iraq and they had come up with a list of potential suitors, you know, companies to buy the oil in Iraq, is it conceivable to you that in March of 2001, 6 months before 9/11, that Dick Cheney and Ken Lay and a bunch of people from the energy industry got together and planned the war in Iraq that we're now in the middle of? I mean, he had put his hand to a document in 98 with Project for New American Century urging Clinton to attack Iraq right then and there. So it doesn't seem like a stretch to me.
Well, you know what, Tom? And you're going to be surprised, I think, by this response. If they did, I wouldn't have a problem with it. I don't understand why the administration's being defensive about that. You had running Iraq, a Hitler-type character who was killing people right and left, who was sitting on weapons of mass destruction. The fact that we went to the U.N. and gave him 9 months to give the stuff away to other terrorists doesn't mean he didn't have weapons of mass destruction.
Come on, Larry. Come on. I mean, you've got – what about Kim Jong-il? What about the Musharraf in Pakistan? He's sitting on an atomic bomb.
Well, we have to take care of
that. I mean, what about Mugabe in Zimbabwe? I mean, is it our job to decide who are the bad dictators and go out and take them out? Come on.
Well, let me mention.
I know you're not that naive.
I'm not an apologist. You know, you're talking to the last guy who's going to be an apologist, even for his own party, because I'm promoting myself as the true Republican conservative reformer in Florida that's going to take on the Republican establishment, because that establishment has busted the budget and done a lot of other things that aren't very Republican or very conservative or very, in my view, patriotic.
Yeah, I get that. But, I mean, why not if you know, Iraq is sitting, you know, as Dick Cheney has so famously quoted, you know, Iraq is sitting on 10% of the world's oil. That's very significant. Second only to Saudi Arabia. Now it turns out, Newsweek this week reporting, it's probably more than Saudi Arabia. And
yeah, there's no question. Let me back up before I get your riled too much.
Okay.
It is true, and you're referring to documents that we uncovered at Judicial Watch, that the oil companies were eyeing longingly the European oil companies' control of the Iraqi oil fields. That's the second biggest oil supply in the world. And the point I was going to make is,
is that to go in there to secure the oil, not to steal it from the Iraqis, let them use it to reconstruct their country, shouldn't be American taxpayers, in my view, paying for it, is a legitimate reason to have gone into Iraq. And one of the things that George W. Bush doesn't want to talk about, because it's not politically correct, is that you had this guy, Saddam Hussein, that actually put a hit out on George Bush the first, on the first president, tried to kill the first president. Now, if that isn't grounds for war, I don't know what is.
Yeah, well, perhaps back then, and you know, here's the honesty thing, and I think you're raising this and raising it very well, and I don't disagree with you actually in the broad concept, and that is, if we're going to say, as George Herbert Walker Bush did, that the American lifestyle is not negotiable, that we're not going to raise CAFE standards on automobiles. I mean, we could eliminate. In, you know, if we had simply followed the course that Jimmy Carter started towards energy independence, right now we might not be importing any foreign oil at all. Why not be looking at these domestic policies? Why not consider the fact that half of the oil that we're using in the United States we have to import is a security problem, and instead of solving it by projecting billions of dollars of force and weaponry all around the world, creating, you know, enemies and you know, all this. Why not just solve it here?
I agree with you. And that's another thing I'm saying about to my fellow Republicans, is that, hey, conservative means to conserve. Let's A, conserve, and let's B, go to alternative sources of energy. I don't believe that we should be in the Middle East for any other reason than to fulfill our security commitments to the state of Israel. That's it. The only democracy there, the only country that's on our side, the only country that frankly has our same values. I hate to say that, but it's true.
Well, you know, if you believe that, Iraq isn't really the biggest threat in the Middle East to Israel. Probably Saudi Arabia is.
Yeah, no, you're right. And I'm saying to the administration, hey, let's not talk about establishing democracy in Iraq. Nobody believes there's going to be democracy in Iraq. They can't even get along with themselves over there, even within factions. We won't live long enough to ever see it. Won't be in the next century or decade or millennium. So let's talk candidly why we're there. We went there because the guy's a dictator. He had weapons of mass destruction. We wanted to secure the oil, and we wanted a military base in the Middle East because we were being thrown out of Saudi Arabia.
That's in reverse order of importance.
Maybe.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
The other thing is, you're right about Saudi Arabia, and this is something that, you know, the Michael Moore movie, I see it as the work. It's a political hatchet job to try to get John Kerry elected. He's even jettisoned his friend Ralph Nader, because that's how much he wants Bush out.
Well, he actually jettisoned Nader during the 2000 election, when Nader refused to pull out of the battleground states. I mean, he and Nader had this big battle. He writes about it in his book, Stupid White Man.
Yeah, maybe.
Nader threw him out. Hasn't talked to him since.
The point I'm making is, despite all that, and despite I'm not a Michael Moore fan, he's on the other end of the political spectrum from me, he raises questions that need to be addressed.
Yeah.
And the biggest question, you just hit on it, is Saudi Arabia. Why are we so cozy with the Saudis? They should be on the terrorist watch list. My first action is as U.S. Senator from Florida, and I'll represent people from your state and elsewhere as well as a U.S. Senator, will be to propose legislation to put Saudi Arabia on the terrorist watch list. It's the worst terrorist state of all. And then answer the question why they were taken out of the country so quickly. If anyone believes that the FBI did a thorough job questioning these people, they live in Wonderland. Alice in Wonderland, maybe Neverland.
Yeah.
You know, Peter
Pan. Well, even the FBI has said they didn't get a chance to talk to them.
No, and they weren't competent. They were so politicized. I represented two FBI agents that tried to investigate Saudi money laundering for terrorists here in this country, and they were thwarted by middle-level FBI managers. Robert Wright, John Vincent were the clients when I was at Judicial Watch.
Mm.
You know, the FBI didn't want to find anything with regard to the Saudis because the Saudis are close to American oil interests and American banking interests, and politicians.
Well, and Larry, we're talking, by the way, with Larry Klayman, who is the founder of Judicial Watch, judicialwatch.org, and currently running for the United States Senate from Florida. Klayman, K-L-A-Y-M-A-N, Senate dot, is it org?
.com.
Okay, KlaymanSenate.com. And what Moore's main point is, and if you'd like to kick into this thing, 1-866-889-8894 is our toll free number. Moore's point is, it wasn't just that the Saudis were tight with our banking interests, although, you know, they own one of our largest banks, or that they were tight with our oil, but they were tight with the Bush family.
That's true.
Yeah.
And I said to the president when I was chairman and general counsel of Judicial Watch, I said, you know, I didn't have a personal meeting. I sent a press release out and made it public. I said, you know, GW, you got to distance, get your dad to distance himself from the Bin Laden family. He's sitting on this Carlyle Group as a consultant, doesn't need the money. He's a multimillionaire. It's not like he's unemployed or anything.
Yeah.
And they have accepted several billion dollars in investment accounts from the Bin Laden family, and it's not good for you. It puts you in a conflict of interest. You're president. And sure enough, it's come back like egg in his face, and it's going to be used big time during this campaign, and it may hurt the president. And I told him, I warned him, I said, you know, get your dad to distance himself from that family. And frankly, the other people in your administration.
But George had, you know, his initial oil company, Armbusto or whatever it was funded with money from Bin Laden's brother.
Doesn't surprise me, and I'm being a little bit charitable because there's no question that many people in the oil industry, and there are many in this administration, are very close with the Saudi royal family and the Bin Laden family.
Yeah, let's
gotta stay away from the Saudis. They should be verboten.
Yeah,
very sweet. Sweet-speaking people when you watch them on TV, Prince Bandar and that young kid that they throw out there.
Yeah.
But these people are as slick and as ruthless and as dishonest.
And toxic.
And frankly,
I mean, they are promoting a hate everybody else, what was a little fringe, lunatic fringe part of Islam. Anyhow, let's take some callers here for Larry Klayman, Judicial Watch, formerly the founder of Judicial Watch, running for the United States Senate now. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Dave in Eureka, California is on the line. Dave, you're live on the air with Larry Klayman and Tom Hartman.
Yes, good morning, gentlemen. Larry, I think you're coming close to dabbling in an ugly reality that too many politicians avoid. I believe that we're being deceived unmercifully by our government. I also believe that even though people may be extremely rich, as the oil tycoons in our White House are, some of the richest of people remain the greediest and the most exploitive. And I see that reality permeating our White House and too much of the Republican Party today. The reality that you're coming close to in addressing why was there a need to be flying these Arabs out of the country, and that the Arabs are indeed potentially a real threat to the United States. You have to also address the reality that Bush, the administration, had been making it clear that they were looking for a reason to invade Iraq.
Yeah, okay. That's a very good point, Dave, and thanks for the call. What are your thoughts on that, Larry?
Tom, I'd agree, and Dave, with all of what Dave's just said, with one caveat, is that the Democratic Party, and I'm putting on my little partisan hat here,
sure,
is even worse. And when what you saw during the Clinton years, you know, in terms of the greed, taking money from communist China for campaign contributions, selling technology, I mean, it is a cesspool. There's no question. And I want to go to Washington to clean it up. I will take on my own party when necessary. Y'all can count on me. You may not agree with everything I believe in. Check my website, claimandsenate.com, even if you're liberal, claimandsenate.com with a K. But I will make sure, just like John Adams did, our second American president, that the house of my own party is in order.
Yeah, well, he
been on the record on that.
John Adams passed the Alien and Sedition Acts and threw the editors of newspapers who disagreed with him in prison. I mean, you know, I hope
flaws.
That's not your role model.
He had a few flaws.
Yeah.
About ethics, morality, and religion, there will not be liberty. And it doesn't matter how many times you change your forms of government or your rulers, you won't have liberty unless you adhere to some kind of an ethical standard. And that is true.
Well, and that's, you know, there's our Constitution. We got about 3 minutes left. We got a Jerry in North Carolina. Let's take his call real quickly here. Jerry, what's up?
Good afternoon. For Mr. Klayman, I thought there was an ounce of fairness when you sued the Bush administration over the energy policy, or sued Dick Cheney, and I was really disappointed when you and Judicial Watch stood silent over the Joe Wilson, Valerie Plum incident. I was looking for action from Judicial Watch, and I was sorely disappointed.
What incident was that?
When they outed his wife as a CIA operative and broke federal law.
Now, wait a sec. Let me explain. I'm no longer with Judicial Watch. I've been running for the Senate for the last year, so their actions are independent as of September of last year.
Is it something that if you were running Judicial Watch, you would have said, hey, okay, let's go after this thing?
I'm not sure that Judicial Watch didn't look into it. I kind of think that they did. Go back on their website, judicialwatch.org. But
yeah,
certainly if I had been chairman, we would have looked at that if they didn't already look at that. And I would also, in one other area, I would have probably taken a different position than my colleagues, but I can't meddle in what they're doing because I'm a political candidate right now.
Sure. Which raises a question for me.
Scalia, in the Cheney Energy Task Force, I think Justice Scalia behaved disgracefully. I think he should have been removed from the Cheney Energy Task Force case. And I think accepting a hunting shrimp may even be grounds for impeachment.
Of Scalia, yeah.
That's how strongly I feel about Scalia and what he did.
Yeah, I absolutely don't disagree with you. And to put this in context, I mean, Clinton was hunted for years with prosecutors spending tens of millions of our dollars over a land deal that he lost money on 20 years ago and his sex life. How can you compare that with Republicans blocking all attempts at investigation in the House and Senate of Cheney and Bush telling lies and enriching their friends over a war that's costing us all billions of dollars and has caused the deaths of thousands of innocent civilians and nearly 1,000 Americans?
Tom, I agree with half of your question. Clinton wants his reign of terror, so to speak, of 8 years to be all defined as just about sex stupid. If you look at his book, he won't talk about Chinagate in any depth, selling high technology to the Chinese for campaign contributions. He won't talk about getting FBI files. He won't talk about selling pardons. He won't talk about stealing the White House furniture. He won't talk about all that. It's all about just...
It turns out the White House furniture thing was a hoax that was perpetuated by the Republican Party.
Well, whatever. In any event,
it was.
What he talks about is dropping his trousers, you know, and that's obviously...
But, you know, how do, you know, Clinton, you know, Larry, the bottom line for me is Clinton lied and nobody died. Larry, we got to take a break here. Larry, if you could just hold on, we got to take a break here. It's the Tom Hartman radio program. 10 minutes before the hour, we're talking with Larry Klayman, Klayman, Senate.org, the founder of Judicial Watch. We'll be right back.
Do you want to own a computer? Is your credit less than perfect? If you have a checking account and can afford a weekly payment of $29.95 for just 12 months, then you are already approved for a brand new IBM, Dell, eMachine, or other name brand computer guaranteed. You heard right. Bad credit? No problem. There is no credit check, so you will not be turned down. If you have a checking account and can afford a weekly payment of $29.95 for just 12 months, you are approved for your brand new name brand computer. Just call 800-588-0596. Freedom Frog Funding says you are approved. So give us a call today at 800-588-0596 to have your brand new computer shipped right to you. And if you act now, we'll add a $200 upgrade and a one-year warranty for free. You heard right. We will upgrade your computer and throw in a warranty absolutely free. So don't wait. Let Freedom Frog Funding send you the computer of your dreams today. Call 800-588-0596. That number is 800-588-0596.
Hi, this is Tom Hartman. Join me this October as we explore Greece, the ancient birthplace of democracy. When the founding fathers were searching for the best and fairest form of government, they studied the models of Athenian democracy. We'll explore together this part of the ancient world where the ideas that today animate modern democracy were first worked out. This journey is set on the shore of the sparkling Mediterranean Sea with the sacred mountains of Crete behind us. We'll visit the ancient site of Gortian, famous for the Law Code of Gortian, large 6th century BC tablets of stone built into a wall and one of the first examples of laws ever written down and now the oldest still in existence. I'll teach workshops at the two most important sites in all of Crete, Knossos and Phaistos, plus more. At Knossos, we'll experience the main ceremonial center and the palace of King Minos. For information on how you can join us on this trip of a lifetime, visit www.tomhartman.com or call 1-800-234-TOUR. That's 1-800-234-TOUR, T-O-U-R.
Tom Hartman will be joining the exceptional faculty of The Great Rethinking, The Prophets Oxford, taking place the weekend of September 10th through 12th at Oxford University, England. You are invited to join Tom Hartman in Oxford, along with other leading visionaries, including Vandana Shiva, Helen Caldicott, and Rupert Sheldrake, among others, to rethink and reshape our collective future. The Great Rethinking Oxford premise is that this tumultuous time in our human history may be crafted into the birthing of something truly new. And you can play your part in shaping this new worldview by joining Tom Hartman September 10th through 12th. To find out how, go to the website greatmystery.org. That's greatmystery.org. Together, we will make a difference.
Studying the environment often means hitting the books in nearly every subject. I'm Steve Pomplin for Earthwatch Radio. As science digs deeper into every field, the focus of each scientific discipline tends to become narrower. But certain questions, like those involving the environment, require a combination of many fields of study. Warren Porter is a zoologist at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. Porter says it's important that researchers see the big picture.
People tend these days, because of a variety of pressures, to feel constrained to get into narrower and narrower disciplines. But all the big issue kinds of things that involve how our planet functions at many different scales and levels demand that we use multiple disciplines to understand it. There's so much to be done. It's just the most exciting time we've ever had in science.
Porter has taken 34 courses in 14 different departments since he began teaching and researching. He's connected what he learned in experimental design, computer technologies, and remote sensing courses to help him design a new modeling system. It can run on a laptop computer, and Porter's using his model to assess biological threats to endangered birds in Hawaii. To Porter, combining different disciplines has been one of the most exciting parts of his research career. He encourages up-and-coming scientists to expand their horizon and take courses in all kinds of disciplines.
It's wonderful because once you begin to get some broad interdisciplinary experiences, you begin to see pieces fitting together that you would never be able to identify if you didn't have some broad technical competence.
Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Gaylord Nelson Institute and the Sea Grant Program at the University of Wisconsin.
Listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Say what you want,
mean what you say. And welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. We're talking with Larry Klayman, who is the founder of Judicial Watch, judicialwatch.org, and is now running for the United States Senate from the state of Florida. Klayman, K-L-A-Y-M-A-N, Senate.com, his website. Larry, I had made the comment before the last break, Clinton lied and nobody died. And we're pushing now on nearly a third as many Americans have died in Iraq as died in 9/11. Don't you think that the Bush administration's lies are a little more significant?
Tom, I'm troubled by the lack of openness and the secrecy of this administration. You know that. I have fought to open it up. And by doing that, I felt like I was helping my party, of which I love my party, the Republican Party, and in the style of Lincoln and Reagan. So I'm not going to be the kind of Republican that rolls over. And I hope that many of your moderate and liberal listeners, even though I'm a conservative, will like me as much as they like aspects of Ronald Reagan.
Aren't they going to eat you alive, Larry?
Huh?
Aren't they going to eat you alive? I mean, these guys take no prisoners. Look at how they went off after Voinovich and Olympia Snow.
Let's not forget that Bill Clinton bombed the heck out of the Serbs. A lot of civilians died. There's a lot of blame to go around all over the place here. I just don't think, you'll never get from me, Tom, us versus them.
Yeah.
You get the country first.
Okay, well,
there are a lot of
I admire that.
Conservatives and liberals have in common. You know, I'm
sure.
I'm concerned about the Patriot Act. That can be another show.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, but I'm not going to cast the total blame on one side when there's a lot to go around on.
I don't sit on this show all day long and defend Bill Clinton. I think that he betrayed America when he signed NAFTA and GATT. In the Telecommunications Act of 96.
That was the worst thing he did. You and I probably wouldn't have as much to disagree on. But
yeah.
I think selling the country out by giving high technology away for campaign contributions and some other things is pretty bad.
Yeah, but it's still going on. I mean, we can't make missiles now without parts from China, from communist China.
You're absolutely right. I'm concerned, and I'm concerned about NAFTA and GATT. I think our trade negotiators have sold the store out. And let's look at the pharmaceutical industry. You got Europeans and South Americans paying half what we're paying because we've taxed the American people by $534 billion.
to give the money back to the pharmaceuticals so they don't have to compete.
Yeah, well, and we finance the research that they then, you know, use to make to develop the drugs. And
I'm a real Republican because there's no tax cut.
Yeah.
With all the debt that we've got, with what we're going to have to pay in interest, there's no tax cut.
No, it's a tax deferral to our children.
No, it's a tax increase.
Yeah, okay, so, I'll go along with that. Larry, we're out of time, but I want to thank you for being on here. I was expecting a little more pointed and partisan give and take, but I'm impressed. Larry Klayman, the founder of...
Well, I'm going to be as a senator.
Well, thank you. Good luck. Larry Klayman, the founder of Judicial Watch, K-L-A-Y-M-A-N, Senate.com, his website now running for the United States Senate. Larry, thanks again for being here.
God bless, Tom.
You too. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program. Your light at the end of the tunnel of talk radio.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
The Founding Fathers thought they'd stop corporations from ever overthrowing elected government. Little did they know that 200 years later, democracy would be stolen and twisted in the name of so-called conservative values. Hi, this is Tom Hartman. The Founders of America fought the Revolutionary War against the excessive corporate power of the East India Company, and presidents from Jefferson to Eisenhower warned us that extremely big businesses could destroy democracy. You'll find this extraordinary American story in my book, Unequal Protection: The Rise of Corporate Dominance and the Theft of Human Rights. It starts with the Boston Tea Party and ends with the rampant corruption of the Bush administration. It tells the dramatic story of how corporations hijacked the Bill of Rights, setting the stage for the CEO takeover of America. And it shows how we can take America back and tells the stories of Americans from Pennsylvania to California who are doing just that right now.
Unequal Protection is available in bookstores nationwide. And you can read several chapters online at unequalprotection.com. That's Unequal Protection by Tom Hartman.
Pop and not so pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
This is WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm John Anderson.
And I'm Sarah Turner.
Even though most seniors can't afford to hire a lobbyist, they're still being represented in Congress. Or are they? According to a new report by Public Citizen, the pharmaceutical industry all but wrote George W. Bush's recent Medicare legislation. Drug manufacturers and HMOs spent $141 million hiring 952 individual lobbyists in 2003. Craig Aaron is the author of the report.
There are 30 former congressmen currently on the payroll of the drug companies that worked on this bill in 2003. Also, a number of top officials in the Bush administration, including the head of Medicare itself, left almost immediately after this bill was passed to go work on behalf of drug companies.
Public Citizen is calling for a cooling-off period of 5 years after a person leaves Congress before they can gain employment as a lobbyist.
State workers in California have preserved their own pensions, but future workers will pay in a big way. Faced with a new fiscal year starting tomorrow and a billion-dollar budget shortfall, Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger and the California State Employees Association, which represents some 140,000 people, struck a curious deal late Sunday. Current state employees' pensions will not be touched, but all new workers will be required to contribute into a state-administered savings account with no corresponding match for their first 2 years. In essence, new state workers will give California a risk-free 2-year loan. It's believed 3/4 of new state workers will drop out of the state pension system completely as a result of this new setup, thereby reducing the future retirement burden on the state.
In addition to delaying the return of 20,000 U.S. troops earlier this year, the U.S. Army announced on Monday it's planning to mobilize thousands more reservists for involuntary missions to Afghanistan and Iraq. However, they're drawing the 5,600 troops from the individual ready reserve, mainly soldiers who have already completed their active duty obligations and returned to civilian life. The Pentagon seems to be way off its original estimate to have reduced American forces in Iraq by 110,000.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report.
A new study released by the League of Conservation Voters revealed just 25 coal-fired utilities in 12 states were responsible for the bulk of 58,000 pounds of mercury dumped into the air in 2001. A proposed Bush plan allows companies to bypass new clean air standards on smokestacks. Critics point to the $6 million in contributions utility corporations gave Bush in the 2000 election.
You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Can we hope to achieve real progress while corporations wield control over our government and many civic institutions? At ReclaimDemocracy.org, we believe revoking illegitimate corporate power is a prerequisite for making genuine progress on the issues that affect us all. If you'd like to help restore citizen authority over corporations, get involved. Visit us at ReclaimDemocracy.org or call 406-582-1224.
Martha Stewart has a plan. Of course she has a plan. The multi-million dollar maven of how to live the affluent lifestyle always has a plan. Whether it's a plan for gold-leafing walnut shells to use as individual caviar cups at your next dinner party, or a plan to dump her shares of M-Clone Inc. just before the price crashed, Martha is always ready. As she approaches the prospect of spending a bit of time in the federal pokey for her conviction in that insider stock dumping scheme, she already has a plan to lighten her jail term. She's proposed that she get good time credit, thus shortening her sentence, by helping underprivileged women. How? By cleaning their apartments? Sewing new clothes for their children? No, no, darling. By teaching poor women how to start their own businesses. One wonders, will her course include an ethics lecture? After her term, Martha might follow the path blazed by Walter Pavlow. A former top executive of MCI, he spent a year and a half in prison after being convicted of wire fraud and money laundering. With an outside partner, it seems that Walter had devised a convoluted accounting scheme so he could loot $6 million from MCI customers. Bad boy. But being bad, at least for white-collar criminals, can put you in demand on the corporate lecture circuit. Ex-con Walter, for example, was recently the featured speaker at UC Berkeley's Center for Responsible Business. Walter pulls down $5,000 a speech and expects to take in up to $200,000 this year, telling audiences just how bad he was. There's even a speakers bureau called Pros and Cons that specializes in marketing such corporate crime confessors as Walter. I'm sure they'd welcome Martha. This is Jim Hightower saying, the lesson here is clear. If you're going to be a criminal, be a white-collar one. The after-prison gigs are a lot better.
As a small business owner, you turn multitasking into a fine art. Because for you, doing several things all at the same time is just another day at the office. So who better than you to appreciate how Sam's Club offers the option of doing two things at once. Buying items you need for your business, while at the same time buying items you need for your home. In addition to finding what you need for your business, you'll find name brand electronics, sporting goods, and fine jewelry, as well as many of the everyday essentials every home needs. When you shop at Sam's Club, you get the same everyday low cost on items for your home as you do on items for your business. And when you're really pressed for time, try using Click and Pull and Fax and Pull, convenient services to help you order ahead for fast pickup. Place your order at samsclub.com or by fax before 5 p.m. and at no extra charge, it's ready to pick up the next morning. You've got a lot going on. Count on us to help you get it done. Sam's Club. We are in business for small business.
For a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, my friends. Tom Hartman here with you. Our Bush flip-flop for the day. Bush supports free trade in Peru on March 23rd, 02. George Bush, I believe strongly that if we promote trade, and when we promote trade, it will help workers on both sides of this issue. And then a year later, Bush flip-flops. This from the Washington Post, 9-19-03. In a decision largely driven by his political advisors,
President Bush set aside his free trade principles last year and imposed heavy tariffs on imported steel to help out struggling mills in Pennsylvania and West Virginia, two states crucial for his reelection. And, of course, now he has flip-flopped again on this topic, back to reducing but not entirely eliminating those tariffs. Boing, 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 boing. We ought to have boing, boing music for that one. That's a good one. Anyway, it's Tom Hartman here with you, 8 minutes past the hour. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. The mystery continues, by the way. Who was the senator who arranged for the room in the Everett Dirksen Senate building where Congressman Danny Davis, a Democrat of Illinois, wore white gloves and carried a pillow holding one of two ornate gold crowns that were placed on the heads of Reverend Sung Myung Moon and his wife? And then Reverend Moon told the assembled Congress people and senators, quote, "Emperors, kings, and presidents have declared to all heaven and earth that Reverend Sung Myung Moon is none other than humanity's savior, messiah, returning lord, and true parent," end quote. Some senators set this thing up, and Bill Frist is helping keep it a secret. Who, you know, if you know, another one of our contests, and another contest, if you know of one single piece of legislation that benefits we the people first instead of corporations that the Bush administration has proposed, passed, and signed, then I'll send you a free copy of one of my books. You get to pick it, actually. Even I mean, make it easy. 8 minutes after, 9 minutes after the hour, Tom Hartman here. Jeff in Denver's on the line, 1-866-889-8894. Hey, Jeff, what's up?
Hey, when you were talking about the money we're spending to protect the oil shipping in the Persian Gulf and how much we're paying per gallon, what I was wondering is that actually how much per gallon for oil being removed from the Persian Gulf? Because if that's the case, we're actually paying more here because not all the oil is coming here.
I don't get it. I'm sorry.
See, if we're paying for all the oil leaving the Persian Gulf, like we're paying $5 per gallon, and if some of that oil is going to Europe and other places, we're subsidizing them. So the actual oil we're getting, we could be paying $10 a gallon.
Yeah, per barrel, actually.
Barrel, excuse me.
Yeah, the cost, the estimated cost right now for the United States to provide security to the oil exports coming out of the Persian Gulf and through the Straits of Malacca and off the coast of South America, northern South America, are between $4 and $5 a barrel that you and I are paying for, that the oil companies are not paying for, which might have something to do with why they're showing record profits. But your point is well taken. I'm sure that we're not just protecting ships that are coming to the United States.
Yeah, we may be subsidizing that for other countries, too. So we may be paying $4 to $5 per barrel for oil going other places.
Right. And, in fact, the Straits of Malacca is not en route to the United States, and we just put the Coast Guard there. And the Straits of Malacca is the oil route between the Persian Gulf and Japan and big chunks of China. Yeah. And although China has, you know, other ways, I think that they've got some other ways of getting gas in or oil in, to the east of that, but I may be wrong. So, good point, Jeff. Thank you for making it. I appreciate it. Good to hear from you. 1-866-889-8894, telephone number, 11 minutes past the hour. Jeff was referring, of course, to the comments from the first hour of the program where I had shared with you the story from the front page of today's Wall Street Journal in which it points out that now the Coast Guard, you know, invented in 1790 by Alexander Hamilton to, they created 10, they called them revenue ships or something like that. I'd have to go back and find the original article. But the Coast Guard was originally created primarily to intercept ships coming into the United States and collect from them taxes on imported goods so that we could, A, run a government, and, B, protect our domestic industries. And then the second purpose, of course, of the Coast Guard was to defend the coast. Of course, we had a Navy that did most of that back then, so the Coast Guard was defending those parts of our coast that the Navy wasn't participating in, things like the Great Lakes, for example. But now the Coast Guard, the United States Coast Guard, is operating off the edge of Kuwait and Saudi Arabia and Iraq. Very strange. our GOP platform flip-flop for the day. The 2000 GOP platform criticized the Clinton administration's record on troops, health care, and veterans benefits. It said, and I quote, this is from the GOP platform, the Republican platform of 2000, quote, when it comes to military health, the administration, that being Clinton, is not providing an adequate military health care system for active duty service members and their families and for retired service members and their dependents. The nation is failing to fulfill its ethical and legal health care obligations to those that are serving and have honorably served in the armed forces of the United States, end quote. On September 12, 2003, Stars and Stripes reported, quote, troops wounded in combat in the nation's war on terrorism are being handed more than just discharge papers when they leave military hospitals. Some are also getting a bill at a daily rate of $8.10. Hospitalized troops, including those wounded in Iraq and Afghanistan, are being charged for their meals. Well, Congress has fixed that since then, so let's look at something else here. November 26, 2003, in these times, on dishonorable discharge, Bush administration slashes veterans benefits. Even more than his father and Ronald Reagan before him, Bush is cutting budgets for myriad programs intended to protect or improve the lives of veterans and active duty soldiers. As the Associated Press reported on May 27th of this year, quote, the Bush administration has told officials who oversee federal education, domestic security, veterans, and other programs to prepare preliminary 2006 budgets that would cut spending after the presidential election, according to White House documents. The Veterans Affairs Department would fall 3.4%. From 29.7 to 28.7. It cut $1 billion out of Veterans Affairs. So the flip-flop of the day on the Republican Party, well, I don't know if that's a flip-flop or just a failing to hold to their ideals. It's an interesting question. We have a conservative alert for the day. This should be interesting. This is from conservativealerts.com. You know, before I share this with you, I want to tell you, you know, this is the game. This is how the game is played, right? This is what you will hear on most right-wing talk radio, and certainly on faux news and you know the talking points of the cons, and sometimes you'll hear this also coming out of Democrats as well when they're trying to make their points. And the strategy is that it's a point-counterpoint strategy that you attribute to your opponents a motive. An argument, let's say. And then you supply the counter-argument. Now, what this does, there's a very deep psychological impact that this has, because we all try to, you know, put things in context and understand things, and we all try to understand the argument and the counter-argument, the point, the counterpoint of everything. And so one of the reasons why so many, quote, liberals, end quote, are so frustrated when they try to talk to their conservative friends and try to make any point at all is that their conservative friends basically just, you know, they're not listening. They're not paying. Because they believe, they really believe deep down in their hearts and souls, because they've been told so by the cons on the radio and TV, they really believe that they already understand the worldview of the liberals, or of the progressives, or of the Democrats. They think they already understand it, because they've been told what it is, and they've also been told what the counter-argument is. Now, the reality of the situation here, with regard to our conservative alert for the day, is that historically, there have been, in the United States, groups who have been anti-democracy. That is to say, they have been opposed to more people participating in democracy. They, you know, of course, something most people don't realize, when the original Constitution was signed in 1787, 1788, was ratified and the amendments were added to it, in several of the states, in many of the states, both African Americans and women could vote. There is no prohibition against either voting in the Constitution. There isn't. And, you know, what happened was over 50, 60, 70 years leading up to the Civil War, more and more states said, no, we're not going to allow this to happen until we reach the point where by 1840, more or less, no state allowed women to vote, and most states didn't allow free slaves or free blacks to vote. It, certainly most of the southern states, all of the southern states, many of the northern states. And, you know, the Civil War came and we changed that. And why? Well, because the powerful elite did, you know, they were concerned, hey, if it gets more democratic, then the rabble might take some of our power away from us. Similarly, the reason why the progressive reforms that came out of the Gilded Age, out of the terrible, terrible travesties, the destruction of the American middle class between 1880 and 1930 by conservative economics, similarly, the reason why the progressive reforms that came out of the Gilded Age, out of the terrible, terrible travesties, the destruction of the American middle class between 1880 and 1930 by conservative economics, the reaction to that was a bunch of men got together, these being the progressives and the populists, and said, hey, if we get the women involved in voting, we'll double the number of voters, and they're more likely to be concerned about social issues, and you know, they're more likely to be concerned about the theft of wealth. So anyhow, there's always been a group opposed to people voting. And we see this now, you know, with the purging of the voter list in Florida and whatnot. So here's this is from conservativealerts.com. They say, this is the other side, they say, liberals are always screaming about preventing vote fraud. See, that's, they're trying to say, okay, this is our argument. It's not. But we're betting that they're not willing to put their money where their mouth is in this bill. Representative Henry Hyde recently introduced legislation requiring voters to provide current fraud. No, I'm sorry. I'm opposed to this legislation because I'm in favor of no more, you know, fewer. 36 years ago, we got rid of the poll tax. We don't need more impediments to voting. And I'd rather have democracy and have a few people cheating than have no people cheating and a lot fewer people voting because it's become so much more difficult. Tom Hartman here with you.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do they know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
Do you want to own a computer? Is your credit less than perfect? If you have a checking account and can afford a weekly payment of $29.95 for just 12 months, then you are already approved for a brand new IBM, Dell, eMachine, or other name brand computer guaranteed. You heard right. Bad credit? No credit? No problem. There is no credit check, so you will not be turned down. If you have a checking account and can afford a weekly payment of $29.95 for just 12 months, you are approved for your brand new name brand computer. Just call 800-588-0596. Freedom Frog Funding says you are approved. So give us a call today at 800-588-0596 to have your brand new computer shipped right to you. And if you act now, we'll add a $200 upgrade and a one-year warranty for free. You heard right. We will upgrade your computer and throw in a warranty absolutely free. So don't wait. Let Freedom Frog Funding send you the computer of your dreams today. Call 800-588-0596. That number is 800-588-0596.
At last, there's a positive focus on a condition that affects millions. Read The Edison Gene, ADHD and the Gift of the Hunter Child by Tom Hartman, best-selling author of Attention Deficit Disorder, A Different Perception. John Rady, author of User's Guide to the Brain, says this about the Edison Gene.
Once again, with tireless scholarship and a bit of poetry, Tom Hartman helps take us to the edge of knowing ourselves, our brains, and our world.
The Edison Gene, available in bookstores everywhere.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. Research from the Medical College of Wisconsin highlights a workplace ailment related to people who work with vibrating machinery for long periods of time. It has symptoms common to repetitive stress injuries, first tingling and mild discomfort, then pain and numbness. The research seems to suggest constant exposure to vibration affects blood flow throughout the extremities, which can starve nerves of an adequate blood supply. Workplace light and sound levels are commonly regulated, but vibration amounts are not.
While the world seems to be collapsing around us, there is hope. Tom Hartman's inspiring book, The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight, The Fate of the World and What We Can Do Before It's Too Late, has just been re-released. The new updated version is available now and offers solutions to the issues that concern us most: eco-damage, genetic engineering, virulent disease, the end of cheap oil, water shortages, global famine, wars. We can still do something about it and create a world that will work for us and our children's children. As the inspiration for Leonardo DiCaprio's web movie, Global Warning, The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight details what is happening to our planet, the reason for our culture's blind behavior, and how we can fix the problem. There is information. There is hope. The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight, The Fate of the World and What We Can Do Before It's Too Late. Now with new updated information, available in bookstores everywhere.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
And welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. The truth. Yes, indeed. You're in the truth arena. How do you call it? The truth zone or something? In our chat room, one of our members is stirring things up. He says, he's going to start a Tom Hartman's chat room members for Ralph Nader fan club or something to that effect. Yeah. I just got an email here from Shane in Canada. Hi, Tom. I love your show. I've been listening on the internet for about a year now. I heard your comments this morning regarding our Canadian elections and the fact that we have a major political party to the left of our regular left-leaning party, that being the Liberals. The fact is there is another party, the Green Party, even further left. Fortunately, in my opinion, the large number of parties, although often represented by more seats in Parliament than the popular vote would reflect, nonetheless allow the smaller parties to still be represented in Parliament. The fundamental flaw, as I see it in a republic such as you have in the U.S., is that the second most qualified individual to run the country, theoretically, that would be the number two candidate for president, maintains no involvement in the government after the election. See, in Canada, that person, that second most qualified person, would be the head of the opposition party, and they would continue in that role, you know, that throughout the next 4 years or whatever, however often it may be. And that's, you know, proportional representation. It's not what we have here. And it allows for multiple parties, and you don't do damage to the party that you... In other words, if you vote Green or if you vote Liberal in Canada, they're going to end up together forming a government. And so, the, you know, the more progressive, the more Greens there are, actually, I would say the better. Because it's going to make the Liberal Party more liberal. Because they're going to have to play with the Greens in order to get a majority so that they can form a government. It's just, it's amazing to me that most Americans just don't have any understanding of how proportional representation works, how it works in other countries, why it doesn't work here, and therefore why Ralph Nader is doing a crazed act. It's the only way I can describe it. In fact, Citizens for Responsibility and Ethics in Washington... Now, you know, I didn't look this group up. I've seen their press releases lots of times. They're there. They're real. They've been around for a while. But it wouldn't be ironic if this is one of the groups that Ralph Nader started. I would bet you if he didn't start it, he certainly, you know, the people who formed it were inspired by his starting so many good progressive watchdog organizations, which is what he should be doing right now instead of running for president
Anyhow, it's this group, Citizens for Responsibility Ethics in Washington, has filed a complaint today with the federal election officials, accusing two conservative organizations of illegally helping Ralph Nader's presidential campaign, possibly with support from President Bush's reelection campaign. Now, this is a crime under federal law. The Oregon Family Council and Citizens for a Sound Economy, they say, may have violated election laws last week by telephoning people and urging them, these being conservative Republicans, urging them to help Nader get on Oregon's ballot in November. Both groups acknowledged trying to influence Nader's petition drive Saturday in Oregon in hopes that getting him on the ballot would take away votes from Democrat John Kerry and help Bush win this battleground state. They're going to name the Nader and Bush campaigns in their complaint because of reports that some Bush-Cheney volunteers have made similar calls from Bush campaign offices. The plot thickens. You know, we're not going to change the Constitution and get proportional representation like Canada. I mean, their democracy came along after 1861, after John Stuart Mill had invented proportional representation. But what we can do is we can get instant runoff voting. And this is something that the Green Party has been championing at the local level all across the United States. And over 250 communities, I think maybe 300 now, have instant runoff voting, including like the city of San Francisco. I mean, it can be done in a bigger, it could be done nationally. The Australians do it for the whole nation. Then we'd have a more democratic country, and then Ralph Nader could run. Tom Hartman, 29 minutes past the hour. For more than 27 years, the Progressive magazine In These Times has provided groundbreaking coverage of movements for social, environmental, and economic justice. Author and broadcast personality Studs Terkel calls In These Times his bi-weekly tonic. In These Times features award-winning reporting and analysis of national and international news. Find In These Times on your newsstand or visit us online at www.inthesetimes.com or call 1-800-827-0270. 1-800-827-0270.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
This is WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm John Anderson.
And I'm Sarah Turner.
Even though most seniors can't afford to hire a lobbyist, they're still being represented in Congress. Or are they? According to a new report by Public Citizen, the pharmaceutical industry all but wrote George W. Bush's recent Medicare legislation. Drug manufacturers and HMOs spent $141 million hiring 952 individual lobbyists in 2003. Craig Aaron is the author of the report.
There are 30 former congressmen currently on the payroll of the drug companies that worked on this bill in 2003. Also, a number of top officials in the Bush administration, including the head of Medicare itself, left almost immediately after this bill was passed to go work on behalf of drug companies.
Public Citizen is calling for a cooling-off period of 5 years after a person leaves Congress before they can gain employment as a lobbyist.
State workers in California have preserved their own pensions, but future workers will pay in a big way. Faced with a new fiscal year starting tomorrow and a $1 billion budget shortfall, Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger and the California State Employees Association, which represents some 140,000 people, struck a curious deal late Sunday. Current state employees' pensions will not be touched, but all new workers will be required to contribute into a state-administered savings account with no corresponding match for their first 2 years. In essence, new state workers will give California a risk-free 2-year loan. It's believed 3/4 of new state workers will drop out of the state pension system completely as a result of this new setup, thereby reducing the future retirement burden on the state.
In addition to delaying the return of 20,000 U.S. troops earlier this year, the U.S. Army announced on Monday it's planning to mobilize thousands more reservists for involuntary missions to Afghanistan and Iraq. However, they're drawing the 5,600 troops from the individual ready reserve, mainly soldiers who have already completed their active duty obligations and returned to civilian life. The Pentagon seems to be way off its original estimate to have reduced American forces in Iraq by 110,000.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report.
A new study released by the League of Conservation Voters revealed just 25 coal-fired utilities in 12 states were responsible for the bulk of 58,000 pounds of mercury dumped into the air in 2001. A proposed Bush plan allows companies to bypass new clean air standards on smokestacks. Critics point to the $6 million in contributions utility corporations gave Bush in the 2000 election.
You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
Welcome back. Tom Hartman with you. 27 minutes before the hour. You know, the Cheney says we're not entitled to know who is sitting in the room with him or what they were talking about when they put together the energy policy for the United States, which included $18 billion in welfare payments to big oil and big coal. And George W. has taken all of his records as governor and put them in his father's presidential library, where they're not available. And, you know, aggressively, these guys have been just shutting down. Increasingly, it's harder and harder to get access to any kind of records in this administration. And now comes, this is absolutely amazing. You know, somewhere between amazing and outrageous. In today's newspaper, an article by Ted Brightus in the Associated Press, the Bush administration is offering a novel reason for denying a request seeking the Justice Department's database on foreign lobbyists. Now, first of all, let me tell you what this is. The Justice Department, there was this law that was passed back in 1938. As a result of all the German propaganda that was being published in the United States about, you know, it's the Nazis were great folks and blah, blah, blah. And so they passed this law called the U.S. Foreign Agents Registration Act, which says quite explicitly that any foreign lobbyists who participate in lobbying activity in the United States or give money to members of Congress or the president or vice president, or the parties, the political parties represented in Congress, or run political advertisements or in any other way try to influence campaigns, that those folks have to disclose to the Justice Department what they're doing. The Justice Department has to keep a record of it and has to make it available if somebody asks for it. Now, that's not particularly complicated. Is it? Well, apparently it is. The Bush administration is now saying when a group went to them, went to the Justice Department, the Center for Public Integrity, went to the Justice Department and said, we would like a copy of the database for the activities over the past 3 years of foreign lobbyists in the United States. Foreign countries, who's been getting the money? What have they been doing? And the Justice Department says, well, sure enough, you know, consistent with the U.S. Foreign Agents Registration Act of 1938, we have been keeping that data, but you can't have it. You say, well, wait a minute, you know, why can't we have it? I mean, the law says that you've got to give it to us. The whole point of keeping it and compiling it is so that the American public can know what's going on, right? Well, says the Justice Department, and I quote, copying the information will bring down the computer system. Can you get that? As Bob Williams of the Center for Public Integrity said yesterday, he said, this was a new one on us. We weren't aware there were databases that could be destroyed just by copying them. Stephen Doig, interim director of the Walter Cronkite School of Journalism at Arizona State University, says, I've never heard that excuse, that making the equivalent of a backup copy would somehow cause steam to rise out of a computer. Well, in response to these concerns, and because this story made it into the media, the Bush administration's Justice Department has said, well, okay, we will be able to get you copies of that information, of who the foreign lobbyists are in the United States and how much money they've been giving to candidates for office and elected members nationally, and what kind of participation they've had in running advertisements to influence elections. But unfortunately, because of our computer system not working correctly, we won't be able to do it until 3 weeks after the election. We'll give it to you the first week of December. What is going on? What is happening to America? 1-866-889-8894, telephone number. Armin in Florida's on the line. Hey, Armin, what is happening to America here?
What is happening to America? It's been for sale for too long, and the criminals in Washington have sold it out for too long. That's what's happening to it, and that's what's been happening to it.
Yeah, and it goes back to the 1870s, frankly. In fact, it goes back before that. It really goes back to the Civil War, was when the war profiteering became a big deal. And, yeah, that's definitely – see, I see that as half the problem. Half the problem is just plain old cynical, essentially criminal activity like Tom DeLay is engaged in. Now, you know, it looks like it's going to come back to haunt him. And the Medicare fraud, all these guys, 38 members of Congress taking money from the health insurance industry. I mean, as employees, while they're working on the Medicaid bill, you got Stephen Foster, I believe it was Thomas Scully. Stephen Foster was the one who exposed him. Thomas Scully, who came in as the head of the private hospital group that was helping Bill Frist and his buddies fleece America, came in, wrote the Medicare bill, helped write it as head of the Medicare program, and then, as soon as the bill passes, leaves and goes back into private industry where he's making, probably $750,000 a year or more. But anyhow, that's one half of the problem. The other half of the problem, though, Armin, in my mind, is the whole conservative philosophy of, hey, you're on your own. You're absolutely on your own. Just because somebody was born into wealth, that's like a sign that God has smiled on them. Calvinist notion. If somebody's poor, screw them. Yeah, go ahead, Armin.
I think that's what they proclaim, but I don't buy it, and I really don't believe it, because I can guarantee you, if they were on the other side of the equation, the way the majority of us are in the United States of America and in the world, that had to pay for all these abuses and be subjected to corporate predator practices the way we are, that they wouldn't want to be treated the way they're just letting us all sink while the ship's pulling away.
Well,
wouldn't want to be treated the way we're treated. DeLay wouldn't want to have a health insurance company rip him off. DeLay wouldn't want to have his pension ripped off. DeLay wouldn't want to have to compete with somebody that'll underbid him so cheap that he couldn't raise his family and support him and have a decent living standard. These people absolutely would not stand for what they're leaving us to stand for. They wouldn't live the way they expect us to live. They're very selfish. They're hypocritical, and I think they're obsessive compulsive, and I don't think they're true. They're way out there somewhere else in a psychoanalyst.
I don't disagree. I agree with you entirely. And at the same time, they are saying, hey, welfare's okay. Please give $18 billion to the oil industry. I mean, corporate welfare in the United States last year was around $140 billion. Human welfare in the United States last year was around $41 billion.
You know what most cultures call these people ultimately? They come out of the closet and they call them what they are, a lot of them. They're nothing but prostitutes.
Yeah. Well, that's a kind word. Armin, thanks for coming on and sharing that with us. I always enjoy your pithy insights. Here's something that I am guessing, and I haven't listened to any right-wing talk radio today, but this was in today's news, so I'm guessing that the cons are going to be spinning this thing as in a very specific way. They're going to spin this thing as that this soldier, this kid who, Corporal Hassoun, Wasef Ali Hassoun, 24-year-old Marine linguist, who was just taken captive by the insurgents in Iraq. They threaten to kill him if we don't release the Iraqi prisoners that we're holding. Well, it turns out that according to an article today in the New York Times by Jeffrey Gettleman and Nick Madigan, turns out he was probably or apparently trying to leave Iraq. That's called desertion. He was apparently trying to leave Iraq and go back to Lebanon, which is where he was born. He's fluent in Arabic. In fact, he was there as a translator. He's a Marine corporal. And, in fact, here his one of his commanding officers who spoke on condition of anonymity, but somebody who knew him quite well, speaking about him, said he was really shaken up after he saw one of his sergeants blown apart by a mortar shell. Here's the exact quote from the officer. It was very disturbing to him. He wanted to go home and quit the game, but since he was relatively early in his deployment, that was not going to happen anytime soon. So he talked to some folks on base he befriended. The folks would have been local Iraqis, because they were all fellow Muslims, and they helped sneak him off. But once off, instead of helping him get home to Lebanon, they turn him over to the bad guys. Turns out that about 2 months ago, this guy had told a cousin that several American deserters... this is interesting. Do we have statistics on deserters in Iraq? I don't know of any. But he told a cousin that several American deserters had escaped by bribing Iraqis to help them get out of the country. His cousin, Tarek Hassoun, who lives in Salt Lake City, said, he said a lot of the soldiers, they don't want to die, especially when they see someone dying in front of them. Now, the cons are going to spin this as, okay, here's this guy, he's trying to desert, he screwed things up, it's his own fault. And there is a germ of truth to that, which is what will make the argument sound so convincing. But the larger issue in my mind is, what is he doing there in the first place? George Bush lied us into a war that has enriched his friends and patrons. And caused the death of nearly a third, certainly more than a quarter of as many people who died on 9/11. The thing that he keeps proclaiming when Irish television was interviewing him. Well, Mr. Bush, what about Iraq? And he starts going, well, you know, the world is not a safe place. 9/11 seemed like a quiet day. And she's like, but Iraq doesn't have anything to do with it. Well, will you stop interrupting me, please? Yeah. I think, you know, the big issue, the big story here, the story that is underreported, although it is occasionally reported in our press. But I think the network people, they sit around, they say, well, that's not news anymore. We've heard that before. The story that's underreported is that our soldiers in Iraq are realizing that it was a phony war. They're as upset with George Bush as I am, many of them. Morale is in the toilet. I mean, you've always got a bunch of young guys who are like, yeah, hey, let's get out there, let's have a fight. You know, it's like sports, particularly in the Marine Corps. You could send them anywhere for any purpose. Oh, yeah, let's get out there, let's have a fight. You know, just testosterone-driven 19-year-olds. And, of course, you know, those we hear, though, you know, we see those interviews on TV and radio. But that's not the sum total of the American Armed Forces. And increasingly we're seeing, and it's becoming so obvious here in the United States, because there are these groups who are developing websites and outreach programs, you know, families of Americans overseas against the war. You know, there's just a whole bunch of them now. 2 days ago, on Monday, one of the stories I didn't have time to get to was the story of a woman in California who called in the press. See, under the new rules that were essentially forced on the Pentagon, if you can now take pictures of coffins. Now, they still don't allow it at Dover, you know, where they're coming in by the dozens or the 20, 30 at a time. They still don't allow those photos. But her son, who had died in Iraq, he was being shipped back. And the flight from Dover to her home in California was on a private airline. In other words, he was shipped as cargo. That's, people ship, you know, caskets as cargo all the time. And so she invited the press to show up. And some 34 or 38 reporters, I don't have the story right in front of me, did show up. It made the local news. It was on local television. It was in the local papers. I mean, it was a local story. It was, you know, local mom upset about the war, invites the press out to see her son for his final return home. Sort of like the tragic story told in Fahrenheit 9/11. And that is what is happening more and more across the United States. You've got more than half of America now saying the whatever comes out of Iraq, it was not worth 800 young men and women dying, and between 4,000 and 12,000 young men and women, American men and women, being wounded, and 10 to 20,000 innocent Iraqi civilians, many of them children, being killed, and tens of thousands more being horrifically misfigured, damaged, burned, limbs blown off. And it's not worth $170 billion. I mean, we could rebuild all the schools in America with that. It just ain't worth it. You got 70% of Americans saying George Bush lied to us now. People are waking up, even in the armed forces. Tom Hartman with you.
The following phone call was not recorded on February 30th, 2004.
Thank you for calling about DirecTV. My name is Lynn. How can I help you?
Thank you, sir. Thank goodness you're there. You've got to help me. My cable company is raising their rates again. I don't know what I'm going to do.
It's okay, ma'am. I'm here to help. I'm glad you called.
They're taking away our favorite channels and charging more. It's just wrong.
Ma'am, I get that all the time. Let me help you right away. Would you like to get over 125 channels of your favorite programming for only $39.99?
Will I still be able to get my local channels?
Absolutely. And because you called American Satellite right now, you can get up to a four-room DirecTV system for free and free professional installation for all new customers with an annual programming commitment.
Oh, thank you. My husband, Nick, is going to be so happy.
Call American Satellite at 1-800-505-1542. That's 800-505-1542. Call now and ask how you can get total choice for only $29.99 a month for the first 6 months. A $60 value. 800-505-1542. Add $4.99 a month for second and each additional receiver. Offer ends July 17, 2004. Call now.
Are George Bush's policies getting you down? Have you had enough of Bush's messianic militarism? Does John Ashcroft's assault on the Bill of Rights scare you? Do you believe that Dick Cheney had his conscience surgically removed 3 decades ago? Are you angry at the Iraq fiasco that was the brainchild of Deputy Secretary of Defense Paul out of his Wolfowitz? Well, then subscribe to the Progressive magazine. You'll get the insights of Barbara Ehrenreich, the inspiration of Howard Zinn, and the mirth of Molly Ivins, Will Durst, and Kate Clinton. They'll help you survive this dark age. And check this out. You can subscribe today for only $12 for 12 monthly issues. Simply get on the web and go to www.progressive.org or call 1-800-827-0555 and mention offer radio. That's 1-800-827-0555 and mention the radio offer from the Tom Hartman program. That's the Progressive. It's your antidote to reactionary policies.
Tom
Tom Hartman will be joining the exceptional faculty of The Great Rethinking, The Prophets Oxford, taking place the weekend of September 10th through 12th at Oxford University, England. You are invited to join Tom Hartman in Oxford, along with other leading visionaries, including Vandana Shiva, Helen Caldicott, and Rupert Sheldrake, among others, to rethink and reshape our collective future. The Great Rethinking Oxford premise is that this tumultuous time in our human history may be crafted into the birthing of something truly new. And you can play your part in shaping this new worldview by joining Tom Hartman September 10th through 12th. To find out how, go to the website greatmystery.org. That's greatmystery.org. Together, we will make a difference.
Getting plenty of warnings about the energy path we're on, according to an expert, but he says we're not responding. I'm Steve Pomplin for Earthwatch Radio. Daniel Kamen says many of our society's recent troubles have centered on energy, but he says people are not making the connection.
What are the big events that have happened in the last decade? Well, we've seen two Gulf Wars. We have seen the California energy crisis, the Northeast blackouts. We clearly are seeing the initial signs of climate change resulting from human activity. If I were to sort of design a crisis, those are the things I would put into it. Serious things to get our attention, but hopefully things that aren't going to wreck the quality of life. And yet, we don't seem to be seeing much of a response.
Kamen directs a renewable energy laboratory at the University of California at Berkeley. He recently led a study that found that renewable energy technologies could add more than 1 million jobs to the U.S. economy. But Kamen says the federal government plans to meet future energy needs by building more fossil fuel and nuclear power plants.
We may need more of each of those. That's up for discussion. But what I think is the clear message is that we need to diversify our supply. And so I sort of have been surprised that what I think are very clear signals that our energy economy needs to be redirected don't seem to have made much impact at the national level.
The price of oil is at record levels, and U.S. oil imports grow larger every year. About $125 billion flow out of the country every year to buy energy. Kamen says things might have to get worse to wake people up to the need for a new energy policy, but he says they're really bad enough already. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Gaylord Nelson Institute and the Sea Grant Program at the University of Wisconsin.
Exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
I'm just an old truth teller. I'm your candid friend. I'm not some daydream seller. I do not pretend.
And welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you, 4 minutes before the hour. You know, it's not just the soldiers who are getting it, that there's something terribly wrong with what we're doing in Iraq. I think it's interesting that the BBC is now referring to the alleged handover of sovereignty yesterday. And other publications are talking about, Democracy Now!, Amy Goodman talks about the so-called handover of sovereignty. But here are the St. Petersburg Times. This is the Tampa region. I know we have some listeners in that area. The St. Petersburg Times published an editorial today. This is, written by the editors of the newspaper. And they're talking about, Dick Cheney, how he says that he felt better after he showered Senator Patrick Leahy with profanity the other day at what was supposed to be a lighthearted photo session. Well, that's good to know. A portly 63-year-old man who has already suffered 4 heart attacks can't afford to be carrying around too much repressed anger, but the Times of St. Petersburg editorializes, but go F yourself isn't a very edifying response to the legitimate questions Pat Leahy and others have raised about the no-bid contracts and overcharges associated with the Iraq work of Halliburton. Let's keep in mind what's not being reported in the press, particularly on faux news, which is what it was that Leahy said that caused Cheney to say this. Leahy, as the in the Times editorial, says Leahy, Patrick Leahy, is no partisan bomb thrower, and I can tell you he's not. He's our senator from Vermont here. I don't know him personally. I've met him. I've heard him speak, but I don't I can't. But he's a very mild mannered, very collegial guy. Well, as here's quoting the Times. He is a St. Petersburg Times. He is a dignified, collegial senator who has chosen his words carefully in raising such issues as the no-bid contract worth as much as $7 billion that Halliburton received last year to help rebuild Iraq's oil infrastructure. A recently released Army email shows that Cheney, quote, coordinated, end quote, action related to the contract. Despite his earlier assurances that he would not involve himself in any government business with his former company. And they wrap it up. They say, if Cheney has a better explanation for that apparent conflict of interest than the one he gave Leahy, he has not yet offered it to the public. Yeah, I'd like to know the answer to that one. Tom Hartman here with you. This is the radio support group of By and For, We the People.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
The Founding Fathers thought they'd stop corporations from ever overthrowing elected government. Little did they know that 200 years later, democracy would be stolen and twisted in the name of so-called conservative values. Hi, this is Tom Hartman. The founders of America fought the Revolutionary War against the excessive corporate power of the East India Company, and presidents from Jefferson to Eisenhower warned us that extremely big businesses could destroy democracy. You'll find this extraordinary American story in my book, Unequal Protection: The Rise of Corporate Dominance and the Theft of Human Rights. It starts with the Boston Tea Party and ends with the rampant corruption of the Bush administration. It tells the dramatic story of how corporations hijacked the Bill of Rights, setting the stage for the CEO takeover of America. And it shows how we can take America back and tells the stories of Americans from Pennsylvania to California who are doing just that right now.
Unequal Protection is available in bookstores nationwide. And you can read several chapters online at unequalprotection.com. That's Unequal Protection by Tom Hart.
Pop and not so pop culture, democracy and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
This is WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm John Anderson.
And I'm Sarah Turner.
Even though most seniors can't afford to hire a lobbyist, they're still being represented in Congress. Or are they? According to a new report by Public Citizen, the pharmaceutical industry all but wrote George W. Bush's recent Medicare legislation. Drug manufacturers and HMOs spent $141 million hiring 952 individual lobbyists in 2003. Craig Aaron is the author of the report.
There are 30 former congressmen currently on the payroll of the drug companies that worked on this bill in 2003. Also, a number of top officials in the Bush administration, including the head of Medicare itself, left almost immediately after this bill was passed to go work on behalf of drug companies.
Public Citizen is calling for a cooling off period of 5 years after a person leaves Congress before they can gain employment as a lobbyist.
State workers in California have preserved their own pensions, but future workers will pay in a big way. Faced with a new fiscal year starting tomorrow and a $1 billion budget shortfall, Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger and the California State Employees Association, which represents some 140,000 people, struck a curious deal late Sunday. Current state employees' pensions will not be touched, but all new workers will be required to contribute into a state-administered savings account with no corresponding match for their first 2 years. In essence, new state workers will give California a risk-free 2-year loan. It's believed 3/4 of new state workers will drop out of the state pension system completely as a result of this new setup, thereby reducing the future retirement burden on the state.
In addition to delaying the return of 20,000 U.S. troops earlier this year, the U.S. Army announced on Monday it's planning to mobilize thousands more reservists for involuntary missions to Afghanistan and Iraq. However, they're drawing the 5,600 troops from the individual ready reserve, mainly soldiers who have already completed their active duty obligations and returned to civilian life. The Pentagon seems to be way off its original estimate to have reduced American forces in Iraq by 110,000. Here's today's Dow Bob Report. A new study released by the League of Conservation Voters revealed just 25 coal-fired utilities in 12 states were responsible for the bulk of 58,000 pounds of mercury dumped into the air in 2001. A proposed Bush plan allows companies to bypass new clean air standards on smokestacks. Critics point to the $6 million in contributions utility corporations gave Bush in the 2000 election.
You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Can we hope to achieve real progress while corporations wield control over our government and many civic institutions? At ReclaimDemocracy.org, we believe revoking illegitimate corporate power is a prerequisite for making genuine progress on the issues that affect us all. If you'd like to help restore citizen authority over corporations, get involved. Visit us at ReclaimDemocracy.org or call 406-582-1224.
Whoo! I'm suffering from Reagan exhaustion. Greek gods did not get the glorification that Ronald Reagan has been getting since his death. He's already gotten a king-like seven-day funeral and a tsunami of worshipful media coverage. And now, the full deification of the Gipper is proceeding apace, with Republican politicos openly engaged in idolatry. Believe it or not, they're pushing to have Ronnie's face carved into Mount Rushmore, to off Alexander Hamilton from the $10 bill and replace him with Reagan's likeness, to name still more big government facilities in Washington after Reagan, to make his birthday a national holiday, and to name at least one thing after Reagan in every one of America's 3,067 counties. A little perspective, please. It would be appropriate, for example, to erect a statue on the Mall and inscribe it, Ronald Reagan, the man who gave us Saddam Hussein. Yes, for 5 years, Reagan provided aid and all sorts of weaponry to build up Saddam and his military might, arming the Iraqi thug for his war against Iran. And yes, that's the same Iran that Ronnie's White House basement troll, Ollie North, sold arms to in order to finance Reagan's secret, illegal war against Nicaragua's elected government, a criminal misadventure that led to 11 top Reagan officials being convicted. Just for old time's sake, here are a few more golden chestnuts from Ronnie's tenure. James Watt, ketchup as a vegetable, Star Wars, a tax credit for segregated Bob Jones University, the SNL scandal, trees cause pollution, Grenada, William Casey, union busting, trickle-down economics, CIA sponsorship of Muslim radicals in Afghanistan, including one Osama bin Laden, Ed Meese, extensive cuts in programs serving poor people, Robert Bork, and the tripling of the national debt. This is Jim Hightower saying, let's give Reagan his due. All of it.
Ever wonder who coined the phrase, we eliminate the middleman? Well, one thing's pretty certain. It wasn't the middleman. And how did they eliminate him? Something fishy there. But I digress. GEICO pioneered direct-to-consumer car insurance over 65 years ago. And they've been saving smart drivers money ever since. Give them a call. And you might ask them, what did they do with the middleman?
GEICO's customer satisfaction stands at 97%. How would you rate your car insurance company? GEICO, 1-800-947-AUTO. 15 minutes could save you 15%.
You think I'd maybe hide some Bush's phases? Maybe, please. I'm a Carrier air conditioner. Isolation lets me focus on keeping you comfy.
For unmatched expertise, Carrier stands alone.
I'm an expert. You're on the job. Don't even think about it, Doc.
Our air conditioners with Puron refrigerant are energy efficient and environmentally sound with a 10-year limited warranty. See dealer for details.
Nothing can stop my dedication. Heat waves, rain, your kid's soccer ball. Ouch. I'm fine, really.
No wonder Carrier's trusted in more homes than any other brand. Carrier, turn to the...
Uncovers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
And greetings, my friends. Welcome back to the third hour of the Tom Hartman radio program.
On this Wednesday, the 30th of June, 2004, 125 days until the elections. That's funny, when you put it in context, it's been 388 days since somebody in the White House committed treason out in the out of the name of a CIA officer and bringing down an entire CIA operation. More than a year. 601 days since we started the search for weapons of mass destruction. 684 days since the anthrax killer struck. 1,027 days since 9/11. But only 125 days to go in the reign of George III. You know, why is it the third George is always the crazy one? It was, you know, King George III of England was the one that we declared war against in 1776 with the Declaration of Independence. And there have been three Georges to be president of the United States: George Washington, George Bush I, and this one, George III. I find, you know, it's funny. You just find these strange, what would you call it, coincidences in the body politic. Well, we're hearing that the economy is growing, and I think, you know, that's a wonderful thing. It really pains me when I hear from people who are unemployed or out of work. And I have friends of ours and people who are just, you know, really trying to find a decent job. It's a very difficult time in the United States right now. And the Bush administration is going to be campaigning on the fact that the economy is turning around. Now, there are a few landmines in the road, and it's going to be interesting to see how they play out. We have this enormous debt, some, you know, what are we up to, over $7 trillion now? So almost a third of the entire federal budget now is simply paying interest on the debt, the vast majority of which was run up by Ronald Reagan and George W. Bush. Keep in mind, the debt was less than $1 trillion when Ronald Reagan came into office. Kennedy was upset in the 1960s debate because we had a debt of $42 billion. You know, it was left over from World War II, really, in some ways. So, you know, we need to pay this thing off. Of course, a billion is worth more back then, but it's not comparable. We have, you know, Reagan and Bush and W have absolutely crippled us with debt, number one. Number two, you've got the Fed raising, presumably today, it might have happened already. Here it is, 2:10 p.m. Eastern time, and I think the announcement is supposed to come out sometime between 1 and 3 o'clock in the afternoon. The Fed Open Market Committee meeting, Alan Greenspan, the husband of Andrea Mitchell. Alan Greenspan, notorious right-wing crank and former devotee and initiate of Ayn Rand in Ayn Rand's apartment in New York City in the 1950s. He was initiated into her cult, the Objectivists. Anyhow, it looks like he's going, who has said, and is on the record as having said, that he sees the main part of his job as maintaining a certain level of worker insecurity. His phrase, worker insecurity. And that the certain level of worker insecurity will cause workers, labor, not to demand higher wages or benefits, thus ensuring profit for corporations and diminishing what he refers to as wage inflation. Now, it doesn't bother him that CEOs make 500 times more than their average employee today, whereas 20, 30 years ago, before Reagan, before this whole con economics thing came along, you know, what was typical in the United States was for a CEO to make 30, 40 times what their employees made. In the civil service system, it was capped at 10 times. The president could make 10 times, the 10 or 20, so one or the other. It's either in the civil service, in the military, or in universities. One of them was 10 times, one was 20. I always mix them up. Anyhow, you know, the effect is the same. The president can't make more than, say, 20 times what the lowliest federal employee, full-time federal employee makes. The university presidents can't make more than 10 or 20 times. And so, you know, they're going to be saying, you know, the economy is growing, and isn't this a wonderful thing? And there is, of course, this irony that the very people who, through 8 years of the Clinton administration, were constantly telling us how everything was going to go wrong, everything, you know, the country was going to hell in a handbasket, everything was going to fall apart, it's all going to unravel, look out, here it comes. Because the very nature of partisan politics is that if your opponent fails, you win. These folks are now out there saying, well, isn't it tragic that the only way the Democrats can succeed is by having the Republicans fail? Well, first of all, that, you know, it's a phony argument because it completely ignores the fact that really what we have are two different visions of America. See, this is that classic argument, counter-argument thing that I was talking about before. It's setting up a straw man. We really have two different divisions of America. One vision of America is an America that is dominated by the middle class. That is to say, the largest number of people within America are the middle class, that we bring people up out of poverty, we give them opportunities, so that people like Condoleezza Rice and Colin Powell, who both are where they are today as a result of affirmative action programs, have an opportunity to get ahead and show the brilliance that they have within them, whether we agree with their brilliance or not. It's fascinating to me that these two are where they are because of decisions made by John Kennedy, Robert Kennedy, and Lyndon Johnson. And that's, you know, there's that vision of America, which I would hope we can all work toward bringing the Democratic Party back to. Because certainly there are many Democrats within the Democratic Party who don't share that vision of America anymore. They have bought into the dark side of the force. The Zell Millers of the Democratic Party. Oh, everything government does is bad. Anything corporations do is good. Free enterprise, unrestrained capitalism, that's the answer to all problems. They never talk about our socialist police force or our socialist fire departments. Although they are, you know, they are starting to chip away at our socialist schools and army. We've got 20,000 mercenaries in Iraq right now. Another one of the things that is harming morale within the military. You get so many of these guys who are working literally side by side with the U.S. Army and the Marine Corps and, you know, so on. And they're making $100,000 to $150,000 a year, and the Army guy is making, what, 20? 16, I think, that starts out, something like that. You know, it goes up in the 20s, 30s. As you go up in rank considerably.
Well, the Army guys are getting free room and board.
Well, yeah, like, you know, that's a big deal. Actually, most of the Halliburton employees are also getting free room and board. They're not paying for it out of their $150,000 a year salary. So anyhow, we have this reality of these dueling visions of America. On the one side, there's this vision that Thomas Jefferson held and that the Democratic Party has traditionally held ever since then, he being the founder of the modern Democratic Party. Back then it was called the Democratic Republicans. They dropped the word Republicans from their name in the late 1830s. a vision of America that is has a broad middle class, that is well-informed, that is active politically, that understands what it's doing, that is you know, electing people with specific programs and mandates, where we have free education, where everybody, regardless of their station of birth, has an opportunity to make it, at least into the middle class, and ideally beyond that if they want. Free public education, free university education, something Thomas Jefferson worked for half his life, creating the University of Virginia as a tuition-free school. And he succeeded. In fact, when he died, he didn't even he thought that was so important that instead of having Thomas Jefferson, third president of the United States, on his tombstone, he specifically requested that they put on his tombstone that he was the author of the Virginia Declaration of Rights, or whatever it was called, or religious liberty. One other thing that I'm forgetting at the moment, and that he was the founder of the University of Virginia. It's not even mentioned on his tombstone that he was president. I mean, his vision of the United States was just so clear. And then you've got the cons on the other side. And their vision of America is we must have, they say, many terrified workers. It's fine having a large class of the working poor because they won't stir things up. They won't try to gain political power, and they won't try to redistribute any of the wealth of the upper classes. God forbid. Terrified workers. It's fine having a large class of the working poor because they won't stir things up. They won't try to gain political power, and they won't try to redistribute any of the wealth of the upper classes. God forbid. In fact, we're going to tax the people at the bottom harder than we tax the people at the top. In fact, we're going to make it so that the people at the top pay no taxes at all. I mean, Bush has come right out and said that that's his agenda for this year, to do away with all taxation on earned income. Well, now we're finding that their vision is prevailing. Low-wage jobs have risen more than 1.5% since U.S. employers started adding to their payrolls in September, which is almost twice as fast as the rate that high-wage jobs are increasing. It's the Walmartification of America. The conservative vision come true. 20 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman with you. 1-866-889-8894. Our telephone number, if you'd like to participate.
On the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates block out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
It is one of the most powerful books you'll ever read, full of the wisdom of ancient cultures and the directed hope of modern thinkers. The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight, The Fate of the World and What We Can Do Before It's Too Late by Tom Hartman. Discover how we're made of sunlight and what this has to do with the impact of fossil fuels on civilization. Read about the coming new ice age and what must be done soon. Understand how ancient cultures valued community and cooperation and what we can learn from them. Get in touch with the secret of enough, the meaning of wealth, and the wealth of security. The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight helps us understand and heal our relationship to the world, to each other, and to our natural resources. We have much to learn and even more to remember. Here is your guide, The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight, The Fate of the World and What We Can Do Before It's Too Late by Tom Hartman, in bookstores everywhere.
For more than 27 years, the Progressive magazine In These Times has provided groundbreaking coverage of movements for social, environmental,
environmental and economic justice. Author and broadcast personality Studs Terkel calls In These Times his bi-weekly tonic. In These Times features award-winning reporting and analysis of national and international news. Find In These Times on your newsstand or visit us online at www.inthesetimes.com or call 1-800-827-0270. 1-800-827-0270.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. Has George W. Bush delivered on his 2000 campaign pledge to run the government more like a business? New reports from the Bureau of Labor Statistics and Office of Personnel Management show that the federal workforce grew by a net 70,000 since Bush took office. And these numbers don't even count contractors who now compete for federal work. Of the 12 million people who work in some capacity for the federal government, less than 2 million are actually employed by government agencies.
Are George Bush's policies getting you down? Have you had enough of Bush's messianic militarism? Does John Ashcroft's assault on the Bill of Rights scare you? Do you believe that Dick Cheney had his conscience surgically removed 3 decades ago? Are you angry at the Iraq fiasco that was the brainchild of Deputy Secretary of Defense Paul out of his Wolfowitz? Well, then subscribe to the Progressive Magazine. You'll get the insights of Barbara Ehrenreich, the inspiration of Howard Zinn, and the mirth of Molly Ivins, Will Durst, and Kate Clinton. They'll help you survive this dark age. And check this out. You can subscribe today for only $12 for 12 monthly issues. Simply get on the web and go to www.progressive.org or call 1-800-827-0555 and mention offer radio. That's 1-800-827-0555 and mention the radio offer from the Tom Hartman Program. That's the Progressive. It's your antidote to reactionary policies.
Democracy to the United States of America. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you, 25 minutes past the hour. Today is the day that the Temporary Assistance to Needy Families program expires. This is part of the conservative agenda. Blame poverty on the poor. No, there's nothing wrong with our society that causes it. There's nothing wrong with the structure of an economy or government that might cause poverty. No, it's those poor people who cause poverty. You don't believe it? It's in the Bible. Jesus said that you'll have the poor with you always. See, this is their rant, right? So this program, it's called Temporary Assistance for Needy Families, TANF, expires today. The Bush administration, before they allowed it to expire, had proposed drastic changes, including reducing or eliminating access to education and training, denying additional funding for child care, eliminating the requirement for states to screen for barriers to work. In other words, this is part of the welfare reform that requires the people work in order to get benefits. And the Bush administration said, well, if people have disabilities or mental health problems or substance abuse problems, or they don't have an education, they never graduated from high school, for example, and they need to take care of those things, it doesn't matter. They got no bootstraps, tough luck. So anyhow, the discussion of this thing, the TANF program, the Temporary Assistance for Needy Families, on May 20th, a couple of months ago, HUD Secretary, Housing and Urban Development Secretary Alfonso Jackson, testifying before the U.S. House of Representatives, said, being poor is a state of mind, not a condition. You get it? Poor people are poor because they think poor. They want to be poor. Now, let me say right from the outset that I do agree with Tony Robbins and this whole human potential movement bunch
that none of us are living up to our potential, and that we can all achieve extraordinary things if we work hard to do it. You know, that's a reality, and that's one of the extraordinary and wonderful realities of America. But beneath that, what is unspoken is that that is true, by and large, for those of us who were fortunate enough to make it through school, to have minds that work fairly well. I don't know if I should put myself out as the poster child for intellect or mental health, but what the heck. You know, that we're not disabled. We weren't born, I wasn't born into grinding poverty. I was born into a middle-class family. My father ran a tool and die shop in Lansing, Michigan for 40 years, something like that. So, yes, you can do anything in America, but there are many people who are born into circumstances that make it so difficult that it may seem out of reach, or in many cases actually be out of reach for them. But no, according to the Bush administration, being poor is a state of mind, not a condition. It's got nothing to do with who your parents were. Just like being rich must be a state of mind, right? George W., he was born with a trust fund of a few million, but, well, no, he wasn't, the cons would say. He really wasn't, because being rich is a state of mind, too. So he was born just as poor as everybody else. It starts to fall apart. So much for conservative logic. 29 minutes past the hour. It's the Tom Hartman radio program. Tom Hartman here with you. Our program, The Pill That Will Help You Escape the Matrix.
A must read, The Edison Gene, ADHD and the Gift of the Hunter Child by Tom Hartman, best-selling author of Attention Deficit Disorder, A Different Perception. Ed Halliwell, a nationally recognized expert on ADD, said this about the Edison Gene.
Tom Hartman demonstrates that ADHD can be associated with creativity, high achievement, and a most successful adaptive style.
The Edison Gene, now available in bookstores everywhere.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
This is WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm John Anderson.
And I'm Sarah Turner. Even though most seniors can't afford to hire a lobbyist, they're still being represented in Congress. Or are they? According to a new report by Public Citizen, the pharmaceutical industry all but wrote George W. Bush's recent Medicare legislation. Drug manufacturers and HMOs spent $141 million hiring 952 individual lobbyists in 2003. Craig Aaron is the author of the report.
There are 30 former congressmen currently on the payroll of the drug companies that worked on this bill in 2003. Also, a number of top officials in the Bush administration, including the head of Medicare itself, left almost immediately after this bill was passed to go work on behalf of drug companies.
Public Citizen is calling for a cooling-off period of 5 years after a person leaves Congress before they can gain employment as a lobbyist.
State workers in California have preserved their own pensions, but future workers will pay in a big way. Faced with a new fiscal year starting tomorrow and a $1 billion budget shortfall, Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger and the California State Employees Association, which represents some 140,000 people, struck a curious deal late Sunday. Current state employees' pensions will not be touched, but all new workers will be required to contribute into a state-administered savings account with no corresponding match for their first 2 years. In essence, new state workers will give California a risk-free 2-year loan. It's believed 3/4 of new state workers will drop out of the state pension system completely as a result of this new setup, thereby reducing the future retirement burden on the state.
In addition to delaying the return of 20,000 U.S. troops earlier this year, the U.S. Army announced on Monday it's planning to mobilize thousands more reservists for involuntary missions to Afghanistan and Iraq. However, they're drawing the 5,600 troops from the individual ready reserve, mainly soldiers who have already completed their active duty obligations and returned to civilian life. The Pentagon seems to be way off its original estimate to have reduced American forces in Iraq by 110,000. Here's today's Dow Bob Report. A new study released by the League of Conservation Voters revealed just 25 coal-fired utilities in 12 states were responsible for the bulk of 58,000 pounds of mercury dumped into the air in 2001. A proposed Bush plan allows companies to bypass new clean air standards on smokestacks. Critics point to the $6 million in contributions utility corporations gave Bush in the 2000 election.
You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And welcome back. 27 minutes before the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. Our program brought to you by Small Dog Electronics, 1-800-511-MAX, 1-800-511-MACS, for all things Macintosh. Well, this is what I want to get into here in this this last half hour of our program. It has been discussed in the American media, but I don't think most people have actually heard any of George W. Bush's interview with Irish television. And it was actually an interview that took place in the White House before he headed off to Ireland. It was done in the map room of the White House by Irish television's Washington reporter. And, you know, George was just expecting another, you know, toss me a softball. And then when this woman didn't toss him softballs, he knew that it was only going to be a 10-minute interview. He knew that she had 10 minutes and then she was out of there. So he tried to filibuster. He tried to just keep on talking and keep on talking and keep on talking, just like he did in his last press conference. Make real long answers. And that way, there's no time for another question, right? Because the questions were getting, shall we say, uncomfortable. Sorry, this is just a fascinating thing. And this of course is the interview that caused the White House to notify Carol Coleman, who was the interviewer for RTE, which is the Irish Public Television Network, to notify RTE that she had overstepped the bounds of politeness in her interview. And because she did that, they canceled an interview with Laura Bush that was supposed to happen the following day as punishment. I mean, this White House is really into punishment. They're, you know, reward your friends, punish your enemies, period. You're with us or against us, you're for us, or you're good or you're evil, all right? So let me just share some little bits of this with you, because I think this is real instructive. It gives an insight into George W.'s mind and thinking processes, and also an insight into the toadiness, the failure of American journalism I mean, the press corps, ever since, you know, in the very first few months of the Bush administration, Helen Thomas, who since the Eisenhower administration, maybe the Truman administration, I don't know, had always been seated in the front row, the grand dame of American journalism. Just out of respect, she was always seated in the front row. She got up and she asked George W. Bush a hard question. And to punish her, she was moved to the back of the room because they have a seating chart now. And she hasn't been called on since. It's mind-boggling. So anyhow, this and what has happened as a result of that, I mean, Helen Thomas is still out there, you know, writing the occasional op-ed, taking these people to task. Not Bush bashing, just, you know, raising specific issues, specific, you know, this, what's going on with this? But everybody else in the White House press corps, you know, the rest of them are worried about their careers, their $100,000 or $500,000 a year salaries as senior White House correspondents for major networks. They're terrified. They know that if the Bush administration cuts off their access to George W. or to the administration, they're toast. They've lost their job. And all it takes is one question that irritates George. Well, this woman from Irish television apparently didn't know that those were the rules of the game. Let me just share a little bit of this thing with you.
24 hours time. And no doubt you will be welcomed by our political leaders. Unfortunately, the majority of our public do not welcome your visit because they're angry over Iraq, they're angry over Abu Ghraib. Are you bothered by what Irish people think?
Notice that she said they're angry about Iraq, they're angry about Abu Ghraib. It'll be interesting to see what he has to say about, well, here's why we're in Iraq, let's see.
Listen, I hope the Irish people understand the great values of our country. And if they think that a few soldiers represents the entirety of America, they don't really understand America then.
Now,
there's been great ties between Ireland and America. And got a lot of Irish Americans here that are very proud of their heritage and their country. But they must not understand if they're angry over Abu Ghraib. If they say, this is what America represents, they don't understand our country because we don't represent that. We're a compassionate country. We're a strong country. We'll defend ourselves, but we help people.
This is the let's go on and on part.
And we'll continue to do so. We've got a good relationship with Ireland.
We help Ireland.
And they're angry over Iraq as well, and particularly the country.
She brings it back to it. You know.
Well, I can understand that. People don't like war, but what they should be angry about is the fact that there was a brutal dictator there that had destroyed lives and put them in mass graves.
Oh, that's why we went in there.
Listen, I wish they could have seen the seven men that came to see me in the Oval Office.
And now here comes the filibuster
again. They had their right hands cut off by Saddam Hussein because the currency had devalued when he was the leader. See? And guess what happened? And Americans saw the fact that they had been had their hands cut off and crosses or X's carved in their forehead. And he flew them to America, and they came to my office with a new hand.
We are just so generous.
Grateful for the generosity of America. And
we can cut the poor off from aid to temporary aid to needy families. We can cut the unemployed off, but we got new hands for a few people in Iraq.
With Saddam Hussein's brutality in their mind. Now, look, Saddam Hussein had used weapons of mass destruction
his own people. Is she going to let him get away with this?
Against the neighborhood. He was a brutal dictator who posed a threat. Such a threat that the United Nations voted unanimously to say, Mr. Saddam Hussein...
Indeed, Mr. President, but you didn't find the weapons of mass destruction.
May I finish, please? He said, the United Nations said, disarm or face serious consequences. That's what the United Nations said. And guess what? He didn't disarm.
There's a lie. He did disarm, and he gave 14,000 pages of documents demonstrating it to the Bush administration. They redacted, they blacked out 5,000 of those pages, the ones presumably having to do with Rumsfeld's role in arming Saddam in the 70s and 80s, or with Halliburton's role in doing $73 million of business with Saddam in the 1990s. Anyhow, lie number one.
He didn't disclose his arms.
Lie number two.
And therefore he faced serious consequences. But we have found the capacity for him to make a weapon.
Oh, we found the capacity for him to make a weapon. Huh?
See, he had the capacity to make weapons. He was dangerous. And no one can argue that the world is better off with Saddam Hussein. If Saddam Hussein...
This is the old straw man argument. This is the classic one. It's like if you were to go into your neighborhood, and let's say that there's somebody there that some guy that just got out of prison for some terrible thing, whatever. Somebody who has been charged with a crime. Somebody who has just done awful stuff, right? And he's lit a dog on fire last week, and or somebody who's killed people, somebody who's raped people, whatever. And you went in and you just shot them. And they come to you and they say, wait a minute, we're a nation of laws. And you say, are you trying to tell me that the world is better off, is not better off with this guy gone? You know, it was Hannibal Lecter. And how far do you think that that's going to get you? And how far do you think it's going to get you? Well, we had a terrible guy in our community. I had to go in and kill him. He was a terrible guy. You really think that the local prosecuting attorney is going to go, oh, yeah, well, the world is better off without him, so I guess we'll just let you carry on. I mean, let's say it's true that the world is better off without him. Is that how we do things? That's what the conservatives would want you to know.
He was dangerous. And no one can argue that the world is better off with Saddam Hussein, if Saddam Hussein were in power.
But, Mr. President, the world is a more dangerous place today. I don't know
whether
see that or not. There are terrorist bombings every single day. It's now a daily event. It wasn't like that 2 years ago.
What was it like September the 11th, 2001?
September the 11th? What? We're talking about Iraq!
There was a relative calm.
But if your response to Iraq is considered...
See, that there she says... See, she's not going to let him get away with this. She says, I asked you about Iraq.
Our world is a more dangerous place.
Let's just try this one more time.
You can see that or not. There are terrorist bombings every single day. It's now a daily event. It wasn't like that 2 years ago.
What was it like September the 11th, 2001? There was a relative calm.
But if your response to Iraq is considered...
Let me finish, please. Please. You ask the questions and I'll answer them if you don't mind.
You ask the question and I'm not going to answer them is what he's saying. He's not going to talk
about it. On September 11th, 2001, we were attacked in unprovoked fashion. Everybody thought the world was calm. And then there had been bombings since then. Not because of my response to Iraq. There were bombings in Madrid.
After Iraq.
There were bombings in Istanbul.
After Iraq.
There were bombings in Bali.
After Iraq.
There were killings in Pakistan.
After Iraq.
Mr. President, and I think Irish people understand that, but I think there is a feeling that the world has become a more dangerous place because you have taken the focus off Al-Qaeda and diverted into Iraq.
She asks. Carol Coleman, boy, is she toast. I mean, this is... how dare you ask such a question?
Do you not see that the world is a more dangerous place? I saw four of your soldiers lying dead on the television the other day. A picture of four soldiers just lying there without their flag.
Listen, nobody cares more about the death than I do.
Is there a point
at which... Let me finish, please.
She hadn't finished asking her question.
You can follow up if you don't mind. Nobody cares more about the death than I do. I care about it a lot. But I do believe the world is a safer place and becoming a safer place. I know that a free Iraq is going to be a necessary part of changing the world. Listen, people join terrorist organizations because there's no hope.
Oh, really?
There's no chance.
There's no hope. There's no chance. That's why they join terrorist organizations. And that's, for example, that's why we threw the British out, right? What about nationalism, Mr. Well, and now I'm doing what she should be doing, and we'll just let him.
And there's no chance to raise their families in a peaceful world where there is not freedom. And so the idea is to promote freedom and at the same time protect our security. And I do believe the world is becoming a better place, absolutely, of course. But I'm not going to put people in harm's way or young if I didn't think the world would be better.
Why is it that
let me finish.
No, there she
and
goes
so,
again.
Yes, I can turn to my friend Bertie Ahern and say, thank you. Thanks for helping. And I appreciate it very much. And there'll be other challenges, by the way.
Why is it that others don't understand what you're about?
I don't know. History will judge what I'm about.
Oh, wait a minute. That's the opposite of what he told, what's his name? Bob Woodward. He said, history? History? We'll all be dead.
But I'm the kind of person, I don't really try to chase popular polls.
Now, keep in mind, this is a White House that literally does a poll a day. A poll a day. The most poll-driven White House in the history of the United States. I mean, they beat out the Clinton administration, who was pretty poll-driven also.
Popularity polls. That's, my job is to do my job.
Oh, his job is to do his job. Well, that's good to know.
Make the decisions that I think are important for our country and for the world. And I argue strongly that the world is better off because of the decisions I have made, along with others. America's not in this alone.
Indeed, Mr. President, just to get back to that, can I just turn to the Middle East?
Sure.
You will be discussing at the
good,
EU summit.
Good luck, Carol.
The idea of bringing democracy to the broader Middle East.
Right.
Is that something that really should start, though, with the solving of the Israeli-Palestinian crisis?
Well, I think, first of all, you've got a democracy in Turkey.
See, he's not going to answer that question.
Afghanistan. You got a democracy in Pakistan. In other words,
but shouldn't that be on the top of
please,
the list?
Please, 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 for a minute, okay?
He's begging.
It'd be better if you let me finish my answers.
Please.
And then you can follow up if you don't mind. And what I'm telling you is democracy can emerge at the same time.
Mr. President, thank you very much for talking to
us. Welcome.
Yeah, you're welcome. So that was 6 minutes. It was actually a total of 10 minutes. There was about 4 minutes in there where Bush was pontificating at length. Mostly about, she said, do you feel like you're being led by the hand of God? And he went into this long thing about, yes, but that doesn't make me better than you. And it says in the good book that you shouldn't criticize another person if you've got a beam in your own eye. And it was just this kind of rambling. Anyhow, so I skipped past that part. She also didn't interrupt him when he was talking about that, and so it wasn't really relevant. But you know, here's the thing: traditionally in Western democracies, like Ireland, for example, the job of the press, and this is something that the politicians understand, by the way, just as well as the reporters, the job of the press is to hold accountable. On behalf of you and me, on behalf of we the people, to hold accountable the people that we've put into office. Or the people that the Supreme Court has put into office. That's the job of the press! Is it being done in America? I don't see much evidence of it, frankly. And I think it's a tragedy. 10 minutes before the hour, Tom Hartman here with you. Ireland showing us how to do it. Ireland and Helen Thomas, right? Be right back.
Are you frustrated by your constant inability to lose weight? Are you looking for a natural, clinically proven weight loss breakthrough? Introducing CarboBlocker. Unlike anything else on the market, CarboBlocker is backed by clinical research that proves it effectively helps block the fattening effects of carbs without stimulants. Your body will think you're eating a low-carb diet even when you're not. The results are simply amazing. If you want to maintain the weight loss effects of low-carb dieting for the long run, if you're tired of clothes that are too tight and you want to look fit and sexy, then CarboBlocker is for you. It's clinically effective. Formula is safe, natural, and stimulant-free. And as a special introductory offer, when you order 2 bottles of Carbo Blocker, you'll get 2 bottles of Appetite Blocker absolutely free. Call in the next 10 minutes, and you'll also receive 2 free books, Lose Fat Now and the Low Carb Cookbook, a $100 value, absolutely free. So call now, 1-800-743-5704. Guaranteed to work or your money back, so call now, 1-800-743-5704. That's 1-800-743-5704.
The Founding Fathers thought they'd stop corporations from ever overthrowing elected government. Little did they know that 200 years later, democracy would be stolen and twisted in the name of so-called conservative values. Hi, this is Tom Hartman. The Founders of America fought the Revolutionary War against the excessive corporate power of the East India Company, and presidents from Jefferson to Eisenhower warned us that extremely big businesses could destroy democracy. You'll find this extraordinary American story in my book, Unequal Protection: The Rise of Corporate Dominance and the Theft of Human Rights. Americans. It starts with the Boston Tea Party and ends with the rampant corruption of the Bush administration. It tells the dramatic story of how corporations hijacked the Bill of Rights, setting the stage for the CEO takeover of America. And it shows how we can take America back and tells the stories of Americans from Pennsylvania to California who are doing just that right now.
Unequal Protection is available in bookstores nationwide. And you can read several chapters online at unequalprotection.com. That's Unequal Protection by Tom Hartman.
Are you or a loved one making too many trips to the bathroom? Listen closely because you're not alone. Over 30 million men suffer from an enlarged prostate. That's why if you make frequent trips to the bathroom, have urgency, hesitancy, or a diminished sex drive, then Super Prostate Formula is for you. It was designed by nationally recognized physician Dr. Michael Toplitzky. The results with his patients have been amazing. Reclaim control now and join the thousands of satisfied customers who have had incredible results with Super Prostate Formula. When you order two bottles of Dr. Toplitzky's Super Prostate Formula, you'll also get two bottles of his Super Libido Formula, an all-natural alternative to Viagra to enhance sexual vitality and performance, plus his book, Complete Guide to Prostate Health, and his newsletter, a total $100 value free as your gift. Guaranteed, or your money back. If you're not completely satisfied, return it for a full refund and keep his Libido Formula book and newsletter free as your gift. Not available in stores? Call now. 800-452-0978. 800-452-0978. That's 800-452-0978.
Tiny creatures in the soil help keep plants from running wild. I'm Richard Hoops for Earthwatch Radio. Plants can cause huge problems when they move out of their home turf and into new terrain. Their populations sometimes explode, and when that happens, they crowd out native species and throw local ecosystems out of balance. Scientists don't completely understand why this happens. One explanation might be that in a new environment, an invading plant is free of the insects and other animals that would normally eat it. It appears that invasive plants also might be free of the underground creatures that would otherwise help keep them under control. Reagan Calloway is a plant ecologist at the University of Montana. He studies a plant known as spotted knapweed that's become a big problem in Montana and other parts of North America. Knapweed is a European plant. Some seeds were accidentally spread in some western states in the early 1900s, and now the plant covers millions of acres. Calloway says spotted knapweed is not a problem in Europe, and that's partly because of microscopic creatures known as soil microbes. They infect the knapweed's roots and prevent them from growing too much and taking over. But when spotted knapweed invaded North America, it was suddenly free of those microbes and it started to spread. Calloway says soil microbes play a part in many plant communities. With time, he says, soil communities might evolve in a way that ultimately brings invasive plants like knapweed under control.
Native systems are going to evolve. I think we'll see all of these invaders in, you know, a century or whatever, maybe longer, maybe shorter, start to behave more like normal sort of citizens in these plant communities, and the microbes will adapt to them.
Calloway's study was recently published in the journal Nature. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Sea Grant Program and the Gaylord Nelson Institute at the University of Wisconsin.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
And welcome back. Tom Hartman with you. Interesting discussion in our chat room about how, for example, Jay Kevin points out, Americans Coming Together reported that in just Tampa Bay area, three counties, they've already registered 30,000 new voters that who have never voted before. It's all this, there are all these indicators that are emerging right now that there may be a Democratic landslide, not just in the presidential race, but in the congressional races and the senatorial races as well. 125 days from now. Let us hope so. We have here the resume of George W. Bush now that his job has been outsourced to India. He's looking for a new job. Experience in education, law enforcement. I was arrested in Kennebunkport, Maine in 1976 for driving under the influence of alcohol. I pled guilty, paid a fine, and had my driver's license suspended for 30 days. My Texas driving record has been, quote, lost, end quote, and is not available. Military, I joined the Texas Air National Guard and went AWOL. I refused to take a drug test or answer any questions about my drug use. By joining the Texas Air National Guard, I was able to avoid combat duty in Vietnam. College, I graduated from Yale University with a low C average, but I was a cheerleader. Past work experience, I ran for U.S. Congress and lost. I began my career in the oil business in Midland, Texas in 1975. I bought an oil company but couldn't find any oil in Texas. The company went bankrupt shortly after I sold all my stock. I bought the Texas Rangers baseball team in a sweetheart deal that took land using taxpayer money. And with the help of my father and our friends in the oil industry, particularly Enron's CEO Ken Lay, I was elected governor of Texas. Accomplishments as governor of Texas. I changed Texas pollution laws to favor power and oil companies, making Texas the most polluted state in the union. During my tenure, Houston replaced Los Angeles as the most smog-ridden city in America. I cut taxes and bankrupted the Texas Treasury to the tune of billions in borrowed money. I set the record for the most executions of any governor in America's 227-year history. With the help of my brother, the governor of Florida, and my father's appointments to the Supreme Court, I became president after losing by over a half million votes. Accomplishments as president. I am the first president in U.S. history to enter office with a criminal record. I invaded and occupied two countries at a continuing cost of over $1 billion per week. I spent the U.S. surplus and effectively bankrupted the Treasury. And on it goes for a few more pages. It's Tom Hartman here with you. Thanks to Louise for producing a great show today. At least I had fun. Hope you did, too. Thanks to Brad Walrod for our music. Thanks to Shelby and RadioPower.org for streaming us out on the web. And Ben and the folks at White Rose Society for our archives, along with Mike Toth's archives on TomHartman.com. Thanks to our sponsors, particularly Small Dog Electronics and the folks in our chat room. And thanks to you for listening. See you tomorrow.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
How can contemporary America possibly compare with 1933 Germany? Find out in Tom Hartman's brand new fully illustrated book, We the People, A Call to Take Back America. Through Tom's concise political analysis and Neil Cohn's vibrant illustrations, you'll observe an unsettling, if not shocking, perspective of America. You'll also hear what the founders of this country did to control corporate power. You'll be invited to consider how the American political system can be made more democratic, as well as comprehend the project for the new American century's vision for America.